Good evening, folks, and welcome. Before we begin, may I remind you all of the oath you've taken. The Students' Union would also like to honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship by acknowledging that this meeting is taking place on Treaty 6 territory. Next meeting is March the 18th. A couple other announcements. We have 5 items on the late editions. After consultation with the movers, it appears all of them are actually time-sensitive, so we're going to move all of those lovely items into the appropriate place on the main order paper. Even though they're nominations per se, because there are names already associated with them, and we wouldn't do the soliciting nominations as we normally would, we'll deal with them at the appropriate period instead of after presentations, which we might do if we were soliciting nominations. I believe that is it for me. So with that, we will jump straight into item 2A. Attendance. Thank you very much. Anyway, I was forgetting something. President Kuzmu.
Present.
Vice President Chellen. Vice President Woods is on leave. Vice President Lay.
Present.
Vice President Lau is on leave. Governor Kelly is here. Yeah, thank you. Councillor Battelle. Councillor Borden.
Present.
Councillor Mills. Present. Councillor Handmills on leave. Councillor Bannister.
Present.
Councillor Chivoni.
Present.
Councillor Mohammed's on leave. Councillor Rookie's on leave. Councillor Minarski. Councillor Valdez. Councillor Corbett.
Here.
Councillor Horvat.
Present.
Councillor Malik. Councillor Hamid.
Present.
Councillor Hansra is on leave. Councillor Lamb.
Present.
Councillor Morris.
Present.
Councillor Sim. Councillor Nguyen.
Present.
Councillor Champagne.
Is up.
Councillor Speakman.
Here.
I believe Councillor Hodgson is on leave.
Yes.
Councillor Huang.
Here.
Councillor Zeng.
Here.
Councillor Grihan. Proxy for Councillor Binchik. How do I pronounce your last name? I'm sorry?
McGindra Dodgen,
okay. I'm going to try and get that right. Thank you, Ms. McGindra Dodgen. Is that right? Did I get that right?
No.
I'm sorry. I might just call you Councillor Binchik's proxy, if that's okay, too. My apologies. Councillor Douglas.
Yep.
Mr. Dubichel. All right, with that, we will move into presentations. Item 2A. And actually, before I do that, I'll just remind folks, if you were here earlier, you might have heard me say this, but bylaw 100, when it talks about quorum for council, refers to council's, quote, current voting membership. As such, we have a little bit more leeway. If someone's on a leave, they aren't a voting member and therefore don't count towards council's current voting membership. So we can exclude them from the quorum calculation, which gives us a little bit more leeway. With that, we'll move on to item 2A, presentation to Students' Council from the Canadian Alliance of Students Associations, Executive Director John Champagne, sponsored by President Kuzmu. Do we have a seconder for this motion? Thank you, Councillor Chivoni. Is there any objection to hearing this presentation? Seeing none, we will proceed. Come on up. I'll get your presentation loaded up.
So while that's getting loaded up, I'll just briefly introduce this presentation. So in case folks don't know, the Students' Union, amongst with, I think, 24 other students' unions and associations across the country, are part of the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations, a federal student advocacy organization. We recently hired John in the summertime, so he's a new hire, and kind of a traditional thing is that the executive director, the national director, will always kind of tour the campuses, make sure that they get the opportunity to present to each student council, to kind of feel out the different kinds of cultures and issues that each council faces. And that's pretty much it. And from my knowledge, I don't think that John Champagne and Colin Champagne are long lost brothers. So, but that's essentially it. So thanks all for that.
So just so you know, we typically have 30 minutes, including questions.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, and thank you for having me up here today.
One of the sort of neat things about this job is you have to go visit many different campuses across the country, but this is my first time in Edmonton, my first day in Edmonton, so couldn't have asked for a better place than to be here presenting to a council at the U of A. So thank you very much for having me here. Just out of curiosity, have you heard of CASA, the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations? Some of you? Good? Good? That's good. So I need to start from... It's too much of a ground zero. So just about what I will be going over this evening, a little bit about what is CASA, why it is important for students to have a voice in Ottawa, to focus federally, a little bit about CASA advocacy, what we do, how as an organization we work to achieve results, could be also working with organizations like CAUSE as well, a little bit of the record of success, some of the things that students have fought for and won with the federal government this year and in previous years. And then look at the current year. What are some of the priorities that our members have selected that we're working on? So about what is CASA? Essentially, we're a collective. We're a group of 24 student unions, student associations from across Canada. We represent and speak on behalf of students to the federal government, focusing primarily on post-secondary education. We're not-for-profit. There's five of us who work in the office. We have a budget of about $500,000 to $600,000. We have myself, two policy and research officers. We have a government relations officer as well as a manager of stakeholder relations and a part-time office manager as well. And so, you know, after I explain usually that, well, we focus on federal post-secondary education policy. Often their questions or responses, John, you have your provincial ministry, what is it now, for advanced education, the Minister for Advanced Education here. What the heck does the federal government have to do with what happens in Alberta and at the U of A? And how does it impact students here? Well, there's a lot of different ways in which the federal government has a direct role and impacts the education we get here at the University of Alberta. So just to sort of give you, you know, a brief overview, if you will. So in the top left there, we have Employment and Social Development Canada. Expert cookies, if anyone can name the Minister of Employment and Social Development. He is from Alberta. Jason Kenney. Perhaps you're familiar with Mr. Jason Kenney. But they oversee the Canada Student Loans Program, which is a significant funder of financial aid to students, as well as the Canada Social Transfer and deal with issues related to youth unemployment. Perhaps you've heard of Service Canada. Both the Department of Foreign Affairs as well as Citizenship and Immigration Canada. For those folks who might be here studying at the U of A who are international students, you probably will be familiar with some of the applications and visa processes that you have faced. Or if you're a student who's from Canada and looking to study overseas, again, you might have some interaction with these areas in regards to getting permits and studying abroad. Department of Finance, it's tax season right now, and there's several tax credits and policies out there that directly impact students that allow you to take advantage of that. Again, this is set by the federal government. Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development Canada, you know, the federal government has exclusive jurisdiction for education of First Nations populations. This is primarily funded through the Post-Secondary Student Support Program. This is, again, an area where the federal government's involved. Statistics Canada, the importance of good data gathering and good information to be able to make good policy, again, really important. And they have specific resources dedicated towards post-secondary education. Health Canada will deal with issues related to mental health, as well as the CIHR, which is the Canadian Institutes for Health Research, which I'll get into a little bit later. Industry Canada, you got major research funding that applies to students and to the U of A. The federal government is by far the largest research funding for research in Canada. And that's done through sort of those tri-councils there. NSERC, anyone know what NSERC might stand for? Yeah.
Sorry, I just thought you were going to ask what it was.
Okay, do you know what it stands for?
No. National Science and Engineering Research Council.
Close. Natural Sciences and Engineering Research Council. And then SHRC, which is Social Sciences and Humanities. Elections Canada, you know, granted their mandate has changed slightly recently, but you know, they are responsible for ensuring that students have the ability to vote on campuses. And lastly, Infrastructure Canada. which again is a major funder for things like deferred maintenance or infrastructure. I noticed a few things going up on campus around here. Perhaps some of it comes from the federal government. And so here's where the federal government is focused on federally, and as it relates to post-secondary education. Sort of one of the unique and weird things about doing federal advocacy is, unlike provincial advocacy, pretty much every single one of those boxes has a different minister and a different department. Canada has no federal department of education. So, you know, it's ever so more important that students have a voice and representation in Ottawa to be able to be effectively represented, you know, to the relevant ministries, the relevant departments, the relevant bureaucracies, and be able to navigate that, ensuring the student voice is not lost. But we don't just work with government. To be an effective organization in Ottawa, we have to work with partner stakeholders. You know, we're relatively small potatoes when it comes to, you know, advocacy groups. There's 5,000 associations in Ottawa, all trying to knock on the government's door, trying to ask for something. And so we find that we're able to be more effective when we're able to work with partners. Folks such as the CARL, Canadian Association of Research Libraries, you know, again, focuses on research libraries. The ACCC, which is community colleges. The AUCC, which is the Universities and Colleges of Canada, of which U of A would be a member of the AUCC. There's Polytechnics, the Assembly of First Nations, the Bureau for International Education, Campus Stores Canada. I think I've met with the general manager from the University of Alberta bookstore a few weeks ago. You know, bookstores are kind of an interesting partner we work with in that on many campuses, bookstores are run as not-for-profits. And so it's actually students who work with the campus bookstores to try and bring down the costs of textbooks. And really where those costs come are from publishers. And so, you know, if we're going to try and make education more affordable, it's better that we're doing it with folks that represent the bookstores, for example, you know, so we can speak on behalf of students, you know, and the bookstores to try and, you know, have the publishers reduce or the government reduce some of their tariffs and fees surrounding those costs. And then CMEC, which is the Council of Ministers of Education, which is not really an advocacy group, but they represent the ministers of education from each of the provinces. Just to give you an idea, so like the ACCC and AUCC probably have like 100 people who work for them each, and like budgets in the millions. We're 5, and we're 500,000. And so, you know, students, despite our small size, we're able to get a lot done. Advocate for students, but then also work with our bigger partners to see where our priorities cross and where we can sort of advance the priorities set out by students. So, federal financial aid for Alberta students. And Alberta, from my understanding, is slightly different than other provinces, but I would say roughly 40 to 50% of your student financial aid package that comes to you is actually funded by the federal government. So when you apply for student financial aid with the Government of Alberta's website, they actually assess it against two criteria, part which is the provincial criteria and the other part which is the federal criteria. And so financial aid from the federal government actually flows to students in a significant amount. So again, for your loans, the loans portion, you have $275 million that goes towards funding post-secondary education. In terms of the grants, which is non-repayable grants, money for students or those with the highest levels of need, you have almost $75 million. There's probably an extra decimal place in there, and there is. And then you also have a program in place that was implemented in 2008 that students called for. It's called the Repayment Assistance Plan. Is anyone familiar with the Repayment Assistance Plan or program? Essentially, it's something that students in CASA asked for and fought for, whereby if a student is no longer able to study, and they're not able to work, or they've graduated, but they're not able to work and earn an income, you apply for this program, and the federal government will actually come in and start making the payments for you, start making your interest payments for you, and then eventually it'll just wipe out your student debt as a whole. You know, this is something to make sure that no student is stuck with student debt for the rest of their life just because they're not able to work. And so, in Alberta, you have over 12,500 students who are taking advantage of this program. And it's a protection in place. And why as an organization, we believe, you know, the government should be responsible for providing financial aid for students. because of protections in place should someone not be able to work after they graduate, that they're not stuck with those student loans. So there's a little bit more, though, than just financial aid and student loans that comes to the University of Alberta, to students, professors, faculty, all sorts of folks here. First off, you have the Canada Social Transfer. And I guess if there's any poli-sci majors in the room, you'll know that the federal government really just collects a lot more money than it needs, given the services it's mandated to deliver. So it actually transfers significant amounts of that money over to the provinces. One of those major transfers, one being the health transfer, another one being equalization. But the third pillar of that is the Canada Social Transfer. Alberta received in 2000, I think that's from 2013, $1.3 billion to the provincial budget from the federal government, of which a portion of that is directly responsible for funding post-secondary education. So this is how the federal government can provide funds directly to provinces to do things like, you know, lower tuition rates, or invest in students, or invest in campuses, or expand programs, or whatever it might be, through mechanisms such as the Canada Social Transfer. It's not a perfect mechanism, and it's not very transparent because it's not clear exactly how much of that money goes directly to the University of Alberta, for example, but that is one mechanism whereby the federal government transfers money to the province of Alberta. In terms of research funding, and I mean, it's probably no secret on this campus that the U of A is one of the biggest recipients of research money in the country. It's one of the leading research institutions in the entire country, and as a result, attracts a significant amount of research dollars. Granted, these numbers are a bit old now, probably from 2012. So in NSERP, which is your sciences, your engineering, and your research funding, University of Alberta, either professors, students, or graduate students, you know, received $46 million. Interestingly enough, $806,000, you know, is directly funding undergraduate research. So undergrad students who might be in some of those fields, maybe some of you are recipients have applied for undergraduate tri-council funding to help, you know, fund your studies. SHRC, which is social sciences, $29 million. Canada Institutes of Health Research, again, because I believe you have a hospital on your campus and a medical school, so again, significant amounts of money with that. And then Canada Research Chairs, and this is probably one of the most out of any other schools in the country, 111 Canada Research Chairs with over $103 million attached to that. And that's not just, I mean, yes, it is towards the profs and their projects and their research, but it also allows the profs to, you know, hire students to do research in their lab as research assistants or become teaching assistants. Or it also allows you to be taught by a professor who's like the world leader or national leader in their field or in their industry, you know, which really provides an excellent learning and academic experience. So we have all these pieces here as to why the federal government is really important for students. So really what we do is we take, there's a lot of different things we can focus on. We take, what are the priorities of our members? How do we make sure that what our members find is important is backed up by good research? We turn it into advocacy's bubble and squirts out results for students. So what does that actually look like? So here are some of the things we do. Media engagement, I'm sure that's no different than your students' union here. Whether this issue is going on, sometimes engaging in the media is the best way to apply pressure to policy or decision makers or other stakeholders. Partnerships, like I mentioned, we work with different partners to try and do what we can to advance the priorities of our members. Consultations, CASA was on with only two student groups invited to speak before the House of Commons, Standing Committee on Finance, the other one being a university group out of Quebec, called FIC, Fédération étudiante Saint-Étienne du Québec. CASA is only the only student group invited to attend a pre-budget lockup. And I understand your budget's coming out Thursday. So you know, we're the only student group to be able to attend pre-budget lockup to get an advanced idea of, you know, what investments were made in students. Campaigns, we're running a wall of debt campaign. You might have seen it on social media here and there. I know UFC and the University of Lethbridge is engaged in that. Meetings. Actually, you can see Petros's head right there. Anyone know who that guy is? Yep, that's Tom Mulcair in Tom Mulcair's office. And granted, we're not talking about policy at that exact moment. He's giving us a little tour of his office. But that is, you know, that is who our organization is able to meet with, you know, the leader of the opposition, which is great. And then we do some local outreach where those campuses have invited us to come reach out to issues that pertain in their communities as well. And like I said at the bottom there, we do everything we do, which is underpinned by quality research. So a few things that CASA students have, members have asked for and actually received in government. And this year has actually been quite a good year for our organization, especially February has been a great month. First off, CASA has been calling for the government to make changes to the way temporary resident visas are given out to students to make sure that a student who comes to study in Alberta and in Edmonton, should they want to go home within their 4 years of study, have the opportunity to go home, a multiple entry visa, without having to go home without one, single entry visa, and apply again to get a visa, repay, perhaps not necessarily get it in time. So the government on February 6th announced that multiple entry visas will now be a default for international students. Another thing which students were calling for was exempting vehicles as an asset from your student loan. And I know in Alberta, the provincial government was covering that portion of it, but what that will mean now is more money available in financial aid for students in Alberta because they're no longer required to cover the federal government's portion. This has been a CASA ask for a few years now, and we actually did some digging around, and I'll send it out after Petros. We actually pulled out from our lobby doc from 2011 the ask related to this one and put it next to what was written in the federal budget, and they pretty much changed two words and copied word for word from what we are asking. So this is actually almost $8 million more a year in financial aid available to students. Some other areas where we were involved with was ensuring education was a component for the fair dealing within the new Copyright Act, which allows students to use copyrighted materials in small amounts without having to constantly be paying those fees. Increasing the income work exemption from $50 to $100, so students who are able to work more without having their student loans penalized. Open access reforms for Canada's granting agencies. Do you know what open access is? It's a really interesting area. Pretty much the theory behind open access is that the federal government, i.e. me and you and taxpayers, are paying for research, whether it's done by a professor or a U of A or McGill or whatever it is, and they produce that research, is that research should become available to students or to the public free of charge, because we've essentially already paid for it. Why should we have to go back and come up to one of those paywalls or whatever it might be to access that again? So CIHR, the health one, any money they get, they have an open access policy. Now NSERC and SHRC are adopting open access policies as well. So hopefully what it'll mean is you guys will be able to get access to more research or better research, or even research that perhaps wasn't useful before, but now will be made freely available. And you take a lot of those research that ended up proving nothing and stringing them together, and you can actually draw different and interesting conclusions that perhaps didn't exist before. The last two pieces here I won't spend too much time on is that CASA, as an organization, not just me or our office staff, but even our students, we're frequently invited to speak on behalf of students to go through different consultations, not just with governments, with political parties, with different stakeholder groups. And every time we're at that table, we're able to be part of the conversation and influence the conversation a little bit more. And this is how governments and stakeholders communicate. They won't, unfortunately, don't communicate with individuals, but they can communicate with groups. And so it's really important that those groups of students are there to represent the views of its members and of the students. And then one last piece, and this is absolutely not exclusively because of CASA, while we'd like to think so, is that the federal government's cut a lot of stuff since 1995. Any students of history, whether it's Paul Martin or even Stephen Harper, you've heard of cuts and layoffs, and, whether it's the environmental areas or defense or whatever it is. Financial aid for students has been spared cuts from the federal government. We haven't seen investments and increases like we would have liked to see, but we've been spared on the cut side. And so partially having that presence there, you know, makes sure that when someone's looking where to cut, hopefully they decide to skip students and continue to skip students into the future. How much time do I have left?
You have 10 minutes.
Okay. I have 3 minutes left and we'll wrap up for questions. So these are some of the priorities that our members picked this year. Mental health, for the first time, was selected as a priority for our membership. And upcoming in our annual general meeting in a couple of weeks, we have a paper that hopefully the membership will approve, outlining a series of recommendations that the federal government can make to address mental health issues on campus. Canada Student Loans Program, like I mentioned, a really important source of financial aid. Continuing to increase the amount available, and not just loans. We don't want students just taking on more debt, but grants. Making sure those grants continue to keep up. I put this one in red here because this one, like, a little check mark, because that one was done. But also, this one in blue, exempting all income earned while studying. If you're a co-op student or you work part-time and you're on student loans, if you make too much money, the federal government will start taking some of that money back. We actually had that recommendation adopted in a report from the House of Commons Standing Committee on Finance. The government decided not to accept that recommendation, but this shows that something was carried forth, got some momentum, adopted. International students, allowing international students who are here part-time to be able to work off campus. Funding for Aboriginal education, again, the post-secondary student support program has an artificial cap of 2% a year increasing in funding. The cost of an education has increased more than 2% a year. So this is really meaning a cut in funding for Aboriginal students. So we're calling on the government to fund the backlog of students who are in need of funding and then continue to increase the amounts available. We saw government take action with K-12, so we're hoping they'll take action next with post-secondary students. Open educational resources, which hopefully familiarity with OERs, open educational resources. I'll briefly touch on this because it's actually interesting. Look to BC, look to one province over, look into this because it's kind of interesting. Pretty much if you're in a first-year psych, first-year calc class, first-year macroeconomics, things that haven't really changed in a long time is why do we have to buy $150 textbook every single year for the same course that's been around for so many years, and perhaps every 3 years they move one chapter over and flip the book around, but it's really the same stuff. What the BC government did, and what we're calling on the government, federal government to look into, is they just bought all those textbooks and just put them online and made them free. And so it's saving students hundreds of dollars a year because they'll just, even thousands of dollars over the long term. But they said, hey, like, why should these really common courses with really big classes, why do we have to make students buy these books every year? So not only that, props can use some of those books, can use some other books, or can take chapters from one textbook and chapters from another, piece them together, and really develop a unique, customized course package for their students. So that's something that we're looking at as well to call the federal government to take action on. And then again, so with the tri-councils, have students have a voice. So much of that money does go towards students, yet students don't actually have a voice there. So just wrapping up here, really, as an organization, we are the U of A Students Union, the students at the U of A, we're your voice in Ottawa. We like to get results, and we believe we're effective at doing that. You're a bigger institution, perhaps might not need us as much, but we have a staff, policy and research staff, who are there to answer your questions, here to look into things for you, make connections for you, establish contacts, to help better articulate sort of what are the needs. When Petros is walking around, or Adam is walking around, saying, what is important to students on my campus? We're able to help see if we can capture those feelings and put it into government talk and policy to make sure that it comes forward as a priority for the organization. So that is all I have, and I'll turn it over to the speaker, I guess, if there's time for a few questions, I'm more than happy to take that. I will also send this presentation over to whomever who can make it available.
If you send it to President Kuzma, he can get it to us to put online. So,
thank Councillor Malik.
I just have a question regarding the multi-local
entity.
So it just started right now?
It started, I believe it was announced February 6th, and it was going to start like the next day or something.
Oh, because I've been doing that for a couple of years. I didn't know. So
what they did, I never actually have applied for one of these visas, but perhaps maybe you can, you have the choice between single entry and multiple entry?
No, just give me a multiple entry one. They never asked me once.
Okay, so what we were hearing from students is some of them actually were either, maybe it wasn't clear that we're getting getting single entry visas, when in fact, why give them a single entry visa? Why not just have everyone get a multiple entry visa? So to avoid that confusion, complications, because I'm sure those applications are complicated enough as is, the government made that change.
Thank you, Councillor Malik. A reminder that I can put your name back on the list, but this is one question. Councillor Hamid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the presentation. My question is also kind of on the same lines, but how much of an important need for the TRV was present in the in the schools? Because from my understanding, every international person that I know usually gets a multiple entry visa. I've always applied for a multiple entry one and
I don't have exact numbers on how many single entry versus multiple entry visas were coming. We knew that it was an issue to students. It also wasn't exactly clear from where we stood as to certain students were getting single entry visas. It also wasn't exactly clear as to why those students were getting single entry visas as opposed to multiple entry visas. And the government is still not very clear on that. And so, barring some sort of explanation, having the default, at least the default now being multiple entry visas, is that some of those students who are captured in the single entry process are no longer have to worry about making those distinctions. As well, they also lowered the price for that TRV by $50 from $150 to $100. As well as part of this analysis.
Thank you. A couple more minutes if there's any other questions. Yes, Councillor Huang.
Thank you for the presentation. Could you elaborate more on the mental health initiative?
So mental health was identified by our members as being an important priority for students on their campus. So we've been working, so CASA has a mental health subcommittee, and we work with policy and research officers to really figure out the best way we can get the federal government, where health, again, does not fall under the jurisdiction of the federal government. How do we get the federal government to play an active role in mental health issues on campus? So we put forth a series of recommendations to the federal government, primarily through the Mental Health Commission of Canada, such as making students one of their target demographics for them to focus their campaigns and their information and outreach to, as well as provide funding for campaigns related to anti-stigma, related to areas of importance as it relates to mental health on these campuses. This paper we have is in a draft form right now. After AGM and the membership has had their chance to provide their response and feedback, we'll definitely be making it public, and you can see more into that. But thank you for the question.
Thank you. Councillor Speakman.
Thanks for the presentation. A lot of your members, board members and staff, bilingual?
We have one French-speaking school right now, which is Université de Moncton, out of New Brunswick, as well as we have the University of Montreal. While they're not a formal member of CASA, are actively engaged and participate with CASA. They come to our conferences. As for our staff, out of the five people in the office, three are bilingual. You have me, who's like, could kind of get by, but I wouldn't really consider myself bilingual, and then you have one who's not. But just on that note, we do have a we recognize and respect the importance of operating in both official languages. We do have policy, as within our own organization, where everything we do gets translated, as well as should members a member request, we'll provide simultaneous translation at meetings of our membership and conferences as well. So it's something as an organization that's very important to us.
Thank you. With that, we have hit our 30-minute mark. President Kuzma?
Motion to extend the presentation by 5 to 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Yeah.
You got to be one of the others.
So. 10 minutes, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if a motion to extend for 5 to 10 minutes would be. Okay, motion to extend for 10 minutes. Do we have a seconder for that motion? Councillor Champagne, all those in favor of extending the presentation? Okay. Those opposed? Okay, that motion carries, so we will go for another 10 minutes. Vice President Lay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. You said that there are two policy researchers in CASA, but is any student that's a member of CASA, are they able to access the research tools of these researchers?
I would even go one step further in that, I would say there's something I wish as the head of an organization like this is that our members and our students would use us more to access our services, if you will. With that said, we respond to requests all the time from students and schools that aren't necessarily a member of CASA. We give our priority, obviously, to our members and to individual students who ask us. So we had a PhD student email us yesterday, very concerned about again, the international students, PhD streaming, and we respond to that. So I would say right now we're not like at capacity. We're having so many things come in that things have to be left aside, but we respond to requests as they come from everyone.
Councillor Horvat.
I'm just curious about the repayment assistance plan. I was hoping that you could clarify about students who can't work. What does that mean? And then on your website, it says that it's you guys have been logging since 1999, but it's an application form is still in paper, or it's still paper, and you guys are looking for an online, full online application. So I'm just wondering how long till it will be a full online application.
Yeah. So,
can I add one more thing to it? What's the success of people applying for it?
So the repayment assistance plan is once you are no longer in school, you can either graduate or for some reason had to interrupt your studies. There's a waiting period of approximately 6 months in there. And if at that point you actually make less than $13,000 a year, then you're eligible for this program where government will start making those interest payments for you. Every 6 months, you need to reapply to be a part of this to continue to demonstrate that you have not earned an income and you are not working. After, I believe, a period of about 10 or 15 years, it gets a little technical. After it starts making interest payments for you, then it will start making those principal payments, paying down your principal. That's one part of RAP. The other part is a RAP-D, and it's specifically targeted for students or graduates or whatever it might be, who have encountered some sort of disability that renders them unable to work. We'll start making those loan payments for you. I don't have all the specific details. I'm definitely more than happy to follow up with those specific things, especially with the online components of it. And so I'm happy to follow up with you on those, because some of those get like into really specific technical details.
Thank you. Councillor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for the presentation. My question was pertaining the transfers from federal government to the U of A. The Canada Social Transfer, does that include official languages and education funds?
So the Canada Social Transfer incorporates a bunch of different things that the federal government has said it will help fund. K-12 education, post-secondary, children's services, social services, etc. One of, I guess you could say, the issues we have with the Canada Social Transfer is that once that money goes in the government of Alberta's pocket, it's not exactly clear which amount goes there, which amount goes here, which amount goes towards children's services. Transparency somewhat gets lost. And so perhaps part of that funding, it just sort of goes into general revenue. So perhaps some of that funding goes towards official languages, education. Something that our membership, something that we've been calling on for, was to separate out the different pieces, especially the amounts going towards post-secondary, so it's clear that that money the federal government's allocating towards post-secondary goes directly towards its intended purpose.
We've got a couple more minutes if anyone has a last question. Okay, seeing none. Oh, Councillor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just maybe a quick follow-up question to that, because although Moncton is like your only bilingual member, there's not, like, the U of A might not be bilingual, but we also have a French campus, like composition, French faculty. The majority of the funding that they receive for their budget, or a big chunk of it, is provided by the Official Languages and Education Fund, which is a 5-year agreement with the province. And the province, depending on what they get, they distribute it across institutions. I'm wondering, well, my question is basically, how do we assure that our members get their fair share of that portion of money?
I can't say I know specifically enough about this program or transfer of funding. Do you say it's from the province or from... So you're saying that the federal money that goes towards the province that goes towards...
The province itself applies to the federal government, and then the government, it's federal money.
Okay. I can't say enough about this specific program to give you an honest answer on it, but it's absolutely something I'm happy to look into and follow up with you on.
Okay. With that, we will thank our presenter very much. And as he mentioned, I'm sure if you have further questions, you can follow up with the president or with Mr. Champagne.
Thank you.
That, I'll just get set up here. Vice President Lay, you want to make a motion, don't you?
I make a motion to suspend standing orders.
Yes, I assume you want to suspend the relevant standing order that would allow... so that you could have item 2B and item 7A take place at the same meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have a seconder for that motion? President Kuzmu, thank you very much. So again, just for clarity, standing order says that, I can't remember the exact wording, but basically you can't normally have a motion take place at the same meeting as you're having a presentation on the same topic. So Vice President Lay is requesting that we suspend that standing order so that we can deal with the presentation and the item 7A that deal with the same topic. Any other questions about that? Nope. Okay. So again, motion to suspend standing orders. All those in favor? Yes. No, motion to suspend the rules is not debatable.
Can you explain why you
want it? Let me just see if I can give you something here, Vice President. Give me a sec. Sorry. Yeah, no, it's not debatable, it's not amendable. What I can do is I can give Vice President Lay a very brief introduction. Again, I caution you not to get into debate in your introduction, but you can explain in very broad terms what this motion would do.
Yeah, just a quick introduction. So, as you know, we're doing a sub-renovation, and we are making a motion to increase an allocation of the budget, partly because it's time-sensitive, and the more that we wait, the more that it will cost the sub-renovation. So, so sooner the better, but it's up to council.
Okay. Okay, so again, motion to suspend standing orders requires a two-thirds majority vote. All those in favor? All those opposed? Okay, that motion carries. So standing orders are suspended, or that standing order is suspended. With that, we will move on to item 2B, sub-renovation budget update by Mark Dumichel, sponsored by President Kuzmu. Do we have a seconder for that presentation? Sorry? Isn't it sponsored by President Kuzmu? Is that, I believe he has the motion itself, but the presentation is not for you. Councillor Corbett to second, thank you very much. Any objection to hearing this presentation? Seeing none, we will proceed. Let me get you going here. I'm just going
to
get...
So, just to address that question, the time sensitivity has to do with the fact that you receive a tender and it's timed, so we have to provide a response by a certain time, which will expire before the next council meeting, which is why we're bringing it up here today.
Point of order.
President Kuzma, on a point of order?
Well, I was going to ask, what's a tender?
Silly me, sorry.
It's not a point of order, but it's his presentation, so he can take all the time he wants.
Let me just get this started, and I'll explain it all to you. Where's my damn mouse? There we go. Okay.
This is an enormous screen.
It's an enormous screen! And let's hope it shows up on the... Yeah, there we go. Perfect. Okay. So what a tender is when we do our... Just to answer your question specifically, our consultants, that's our architects and so forth, put together a work package. Our contractor takes it out to sub-trade specialists in various functions, and they submit... they tender back, and there's a time limit, typically, on when that estimate expires. So the tender is just this thing about where you put up, this is the work we have, we're putting out two tenders, what they say, and then you get bids back. So that's kind of what it is. All right, so I'll keep this relatively brief so you can ask me lots of questions, because I'm sure you'll have lots of questions. I sent out a document on the weekend which kind of explained pretty much everything I'm going to talk about today. The first thing being our revised budget. So the last time I updated council in written form, I had said we'd be able to keep pretty close to our budget, and we expected to. But that was prior to receiving our final bid response to our tender on the Atrium Plaza piece, which, if you look at our budget here, came in a little bit more expensive than we expected. We expected it to be higher than we had planned, but not quite that high. So what's happened is, with our budget here, what you see are a number of lines. The first set of lines is the actual construction cost of the project. And on the first column, budget summer 2013, that's the budget we've been working off of and trying to stick to. So we have the tower phase two, which is what we're currently in the middle of, what we've done this summer, and then there's the Atrium Plaza part. Then there's this other part of site services, storm lines we have to move, there was a gas line that was moved, there's curb work and lighting work and roadway work that we had to do. I'm going to come back to that because that's part of the cost driver as well. Another key line is contingency. When we set up our budget, we knew that things will happen. Things happen in the world, and you have to prepare for them. So we set aside a contingency, which we felt at the time was pretty reasonable. It was $250,000. It's more than I'm making a year, so I thought that was quite a chunk of change. We also have allowances. Allowances cover all kinds of things which aren't in the strict construction budget, such as asbestos abatement, the actual cost of AV equipment for the meeting rooms, the cost of furniture, new furniture that we'll need for the renovated space. The consultants line is the cost of all the architects and engineering and testing work that we need to do for the project. And then there's a project management line, which has to do with to coordinate all this, we brought in an expert who worked on our previous two renovations that we ran, Russell Steffes, to help us out, and that's his company's fee. The last set of lines has to do with new funding that we've secured since. So on the original budget, we didn't anticipate getting any new funding, and the total budget came to $13.4 million. After we received our tenders, because we tendered it out in packages, phase one, phase two, phase three, phase one came in under budget by proportionally a pretty substantial amount. Phase two came pretty much on budget, and phase three, Insight Services, came in considerably over budget, and I'll explain why that is in a little bit. So the other things are still on track. We don't really expect them to be off track because they are more controllable costs for us. The consultancy contracts, for example, the major part of that is the architect's fee. That is locked in stone, essentially. It's a contractual maximum. Project management's locked in, although we're going to get a discount from him for that. And some of the engineering and testing costs are coming in pretty much what we expected. They're a much smaller portion of that line. So after the tenders, we found that if we were to do it exactly, I just took the tenders that we got, and those were the best prices we could get, $14.7 million, which is a heck of a big difference. That's $1.3 million more than we expected. So what are we going to do about that? Well, we're going to resolve this problem in terms of the savings ahead, and I'm going to talk about that next. Well, actually, let's just see. So the important thing here to note, though, is after we apply various savings and that kind of thing, we're not talking about a $1.3 million gap, and I'll explain how we changed it. What we're actually talking about, if you look at the bottom, is about $200,000 that we're currently projecting our project will be over budget. So much less shocking than $1.3 million. And I'll explain how we got that from a $1.3 million gap down to a $200,000 gap in the next couple of slides. The first thing I want to talk about, what drove these changes. Before we began the project, we did three separate pricing studies with two different agents. And we did that because we wanted to know what the hell, we didn't want to underestimate what the amount of money that we needed. And then on top of what they estimated, we threw in that contingency amount. Well, a few things happened after we did all that and after we paid the council. The scope changed. Now, the scope is like, what should be included in this project? That's the worst thing for projects to change, and we didn't change it. What we found is that as we got further into the process, the university all of a sudden was coming to us and saying, you know what? That's not going to work. If you want to do this, if you want to do this project, you need to do X, Y, and Z as well. And this had primarily to do with road and curb work and sewer work and re-engineering the exterior part of the building, which is why that's at variance. Much more than we had anticipated. As a matter of fact, we actually clawed them back. They wanted us to put paving stones instead of just having pavement. They wanted us to do fancy curbs and all this, and they wanted it to be a certain width. And we said, look, we simply can't afford that. That's driving our costs too high. So that's part one. Part two is, with regards to scope, is the storm sewer, which I mentioned in my previous reviews. Came in ridiculously expensive. And if any of you are looking to recommend to a young nephew a trade to get into, I highly recommend storm sewers. They're $5,000 a meter or something like that, in our case, to move, which is, I swore a little bit in my office, people will say, when I saw that. That's one thing. The second thing that we ran into, and we're not alone in this, the university is also having this problem. This was confirmed by one of their guys who handles a lot of their projects, is we're kind of entering another one of these Alberta building booms, and certain trades are in a lot of demand and can kind of sit back and wait for the work. And they don't have to bid on everything that comes. So if they don't like something about a particular project, they don't bid. And what we found is that for some sub-trades, they came in ridiculously high. So, for example, concrete forming, which is the work, when you see them doing your sidewalks, when they repave your road, they build a wood form first. Forming, $600,000 over what was estimated. Now, remember, this estimate was done by two different people, three different times, who had experience, like dozens and dozens of years. It was completely unexpected, and the universities had the same problems with concrete. It turns out to be an amazingly difficult trade area right now. Now, we're not going to pay $600,000 more than our budget. We got that knocked down. We'll talk about that in a second. But that gives an example of the market conditions that we were faced with that we didn't anticipate initially. Okay. So how are we going to address these budget challenges? And I may throw this over to Petros at some point because I do my best to drive the number to where we need it to be. And at certain points, we could come in under budget, to be frank with you. I'll be very frank with you. But the exec have said there are certain things about this project that we think are really important that we want to maintain. We don't, as Petros puts it, this building is going to be here for 50 years. If doing X means we're gonna have to go back to council, let's do that instead. And that's why we're here. So there are several ways in which we cut costs. The first is value engineering. We cut $660,000 out of the cost of the budget. By doing the following things. We sourced a new subtrade contractor for concrete forming. Our construction team used some of the personal relationships, got $300,000 off on that bid, so that saved us a bunch of money. We had a closer look at the design, and I'm going to go back and explain. I'm just going to explain the things that are on that slide here. If you look... I don't have my pointer today, and I really apologize. I left it at home. Along this side here, where you have the little strip this isn't exactly the way it's been modified a little bit since, but the general idea is there'll be greenery along the south side of the plaza. And in the midst of that greenery, there's going to be some guardrails. And those guardrails, when we actually went and we were looking for savings, we found that actually they've been spec'd pretty high-end. So instead of what they were looking to do, we cut those out. We've also cut along the canopy. It is spec'd to have metal around the outside and a metal underside. We're replacing that with stucco. Along this area here, this is actually a concrete cladding that's been placed over top. We're going to save a bunch of money by taking $30,000 by using a different, cheaper product there. The interior guardrails and handrails are being spec'd a little bit less expensive. Thank you. I feel crazy. those rails inside that you can see have been spec'd a little bit. They're going to be glass. They're going to have glass. They're going to look really nice. But they're not going to be as nice as what the architects expect. We're getting rid of stainless steel on them, for example. These doors here, which were a bit of a cost and project risk because we weren't really sure how they were going to come out, have been replaced by sliding doors instead. Help me out. What am I missing?
I think you pretty much got it. The glass.
No, that's it. What we have retained is the spider glass, which is kind of one of the unique features of the building, and that was important to Mr. Petros. So if you want to argue about that, you talk to him.
Sorry?
What's
spider glass?
Ah, okay. So one of the things that's going to be really unique about this building is we have essentially frameless glass. Oh, that's awesome! This, and I think this is really kind of cool too. I have to admit, I'm with Petros on this. This is a frameless sort of glass. Instead of having, when you go to a typical, in our building typically you have what are called mullions, which are these big metal crossbars throughout it. This is designed so the glass is basically sheer. There is a metal structure behind supporting it, but the glass itself, thank you, is set up, looks like, it's actually edge supported. So it's actually fused together, sort of, and supported by a four-point connector like that. So it makes it a very transparent, very light kind of kind of thing, and it'll make it very unique on campus. So that's how that's one way in terms of we've saved a bunch of money on value engineering. Second thing we did is we raised new funds. We're not going to stop raising new funds, but I won't guarantee that we're going to raise more money to the bottom line. I don't know because I just don't know that we're going to raise money bottom line to the to the project. We do think there are some corporate sponsors interested in sponsoring us, but we think that they may be interested in some of the more specific things, like an art program for the building, which, so we may have restrictions if we do raise any more money. And the third way we deal with it is why we're here today. See if you guys are interested in us continuing to value engineer, or whether you want to talk about extending the budgetary authority that you've allocated. And one of the things, so I'm feeling pretty good. We got all the almost every estimate. And the only things that are left are quite small or very, very controllable. Like furniture, we can control the cost on that. If the furniture comes in too much, we buy less. Or we buy something cheaper. It's very different from when you're contracting stuff out. So we're pretty comfortable with our ability to control it. And then my building manager comes in to me and says, well, don't get too comfortable. You never know. And I'm like, Jesus, Murphy. And then I went into the meeting today, and I'm talking to our advisors, and I go, look, guys, I'm kind of losing sleep. Can you tell me when I'm going to be able to start sleeping through the night better? And they said about July, which didn't make me feel very good. Anyways, we've got a few costs which aren't finalized, but which we are pretty comfortable with. The storm sewer, we've got one more phase of work. We've set aside an allocation for it. We think it's more than sufficient. We think we'll actually pick up a few bucks there, but until it's done, I'm not going to sit here and say we're going to make it. I'm going to outline the risks for you. The university is required that we pay for they want to have an oversight guy on the project, plus they do a bunch of services for us, like help us arrange shutdowns so we can do construction. We have one coming up in a week, actually. And that costs us money, and we don't have a final number on that, because that work kind of gets billed out as we go along. We think we have enough money in the budget, but it's not a finalized price yet. The allowances aren't finalized, although we have no, I really don't think they're going to, I really don't. There are controllable expenses. We can just not choose not to do things, so I'm not worried about going over in that. And we have a landscaping allowance, but that's the last thing we'll tender out. And we'll do that next fall or winter.
What's PMO?
Sorry, project, I'm sorry, I did this. Project Management Office. It's a department of the Facilities and Operations of the University. Okay. So they oversee all the capital projects on campus. And the other thing that there is with inherent risks, is we had a long conversation at a construction meeting today about this. So I said, okay, I'm going to council. Help me understand how we cannot get burned. Is what else could possibly burn us? Because why we're here today is we want to finalize the final large contract related to this. And these are fixed price contracts. So I asked, so what is that? So I reconfirmed with them. I said, so what does that mean exactly? So if we get a fixed price contract to finish off the atrium, what are we still at risk for? And we went through some scenarios in that. The last thing is really pilings or foundation surprises. So when we build the atrium, we're going to have to drive piles into the ground to support it. Those piles in some areas are going into areas where there's underground construction already. So we may have to do some jiggering around of those piles that may affect the cost. There is provision in the numbers that we've gotten for that, and they don't anticipate it's a big risk, but that was the major risk they identified. The other thing you should know is that several months ago, when we talked about piling, we chose a different kind of piling that lowered our risk. So traditional piles, they drill a hole, and they drive a pile into it. But when you drill the hole, pull up your drill, and then put the pile in that time, if the ground is too soft, it collapses in on itself. So we picked a slightly more expensive kind of piling that doesn't have that risk. You put it in, and the casing is part of the insertion of the pile. So you don't have this problem where you empty it out and it could collapse on itself. So we don't think that's going to be a huge risk. This is a lot of detail for you guys, but I want you to know if you have any questions or whatever, you can ask. Okay, so is this affordable for the students' union? Well, yeah. Our total amount of money we have in the bank typically is well over $5 million. So, you know, spending it, and $2 million of that is an unallocated reserve. So, going a little over budget will not kill us. But what the question is, does it affect our overall project viability? So, I want to explain how we budget for the project overall. We consider a number of things. The project entails certain changes to our lease structure in the building. This was incorporated. This is a summary of a table that was in our original financing documents, modified to update, we kept getting a couple of the numbers. and there's least changes. And we've done three scenarios, pessimistic, likely, and optimistic. So we expect the least changes resulting from changes we're making to the building this year and next will result in $81,000 more minimum in additional revenue for us, and possibly up to $175,000 more in revenue. The second thing is operational changes. These are actually pretty pessimistic. So what we did is we looked at the last renovation we did. We looked at the actual increase in our business volumes and compared it to the amount of seats that we increased the building as a proxy for whether the building's increased traffic. Maybe it's raising a little bit. I'm a little worried of boring you.
No.
We applied that, discounted that rate, and said, okay, so if our business went up 20% last time, we're going to assume it's going to go up a fraction of the same percentage increase in seats that we're doing this time. So we calculated that, and then that gave us a little bit of extra income. Then we added in all the extra costs, kind of a worst-case scenario, what the extra costs that we're going to entail, extra cleaning and maintenance and things like that. And we calculated that and summarized it as operational changes. Then we calculated if we do spend reserve money on the renovation, we're not going to be collecting annual interest on that money. And what's the cost of that? And that's, the pessimistic represents an $800,000 total reserve hit. $24,000 represents $600,000, and $16,000 represents the original base case, which is a $16,000 hit. Then we talked about our loan savings. So we previously were spending $300,000 a year to pay off the previous building loan that we had, and we add that back into the mix. We were previously putting away $60,000 to $100,000 per year into the building reserve, so that gets thrown into the affordability mix. And then we're going to be collecting money from a capital fee revenue. Okay, so we have that fee that starts up in September, and it's going to collect a certain amount of money. Then we subtracted from that the annual loan cost, which is a fixed cost. This is the number. We know what it is now. And we have the net annual impact on the SU's overall finances. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes?
What is capital fee revenue?
So there is a, two years ago, there was a referendum passed. It established a $9 per term fee for students for major capital projects of the students' union, which that meet certain criteria, and this is one of them. So when that building is usable, they'll start charging that fee. It's not actually capped. We pay back the loan for 20 years. At that point, that future council will have to decide whether they want to keep the fee going for something other project in the future or whether they want to terminate it.
Michelle, I'll just let you sort of direct. No, well, you're running close, but just folks, if you want to put your placards up or your hands up, Steve Michelle's pretty good at answering questions that are on the fly. If you have questions that you want to have answered that are sort of related to it, and he can decide whether or not he wants to answer them now or at the end. If you have questions that are more suited for the end, give me a wave and I'll add you to the list here at the end here. So I assume all three of you want to be on that. No? Okay, just the two of you. Okay.
There was a question here.
At the end is good?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
at the end too? Okay. Yeah. All right. So the other thing council has to be aware of as a good financial steward of the students' resources is what are the risks of our current financing plan. There are two. For sure, pay attention, this one will feel late. One has to do with the single source cold beverage, and you two, totally. Enrollment reduction is one. The university is planning to reduce its FLE enrollment by 1,400, Petros? We've based our numbers more conservatively than what the latest year's enrollment numbers were, so we're pretty comfortable that it won't affect us. But even if it does, the maximum impact is $25,000 a year. I also view it as a capped risk. I don't believe the university can radically, rapidly change enrollment beyond more than the 5% they're talking about without engendering two things. One is it screws up a lot of their other projects, like PAWS, also funded by fee revenue, and I think there's some political problems. That's my opinion on it. I may be wrong, so, and Petros may disagree on that. The second one is single source cold beverage revenue. $60,000 that we put into the CAP annual building reserve actually comes from the single source cold beverage agreement money. That is up in 2 years, I believe, that we get our last payment. So we don't know what's going to happen with that. It's very clear, that's going to be very controversial. So that it may be a case where that money is not available. So if that is the case, one thing we'll have to think about is will we be able to sustain this project beyond that? In my report, I don't talk about it here, there are a number of other issues outside of all of this that the Students Union is going to face in the next year or so, a couple of which are net benefits to the Students Union. So this doesn't particularly concern me at this point, because we do have other sources of revenue coming on stream, which I outline in my report. And so I think it still remains viable. I don't think it's going to materially impact our operating budget any more than our year-to-year variability does. Every year, we always have to work hard to balance our budget. We do have sufficient cash reserves, but even if we do make the investment, it's my assessment, we're still going to have plenty of money in the bank to be able to sustain a crisis of some sort. And to demonstrate that, let me put it here. So right now, we're still waiting for the university to give us our money, but we've been doing this project. And we've actually spent millions of dollars. We have the money sitting with the university, but there are certain legal things we have to do with them, an agreement we have to sign before they release it to us. And in the meantime, we have been able quite easily to manage our cash flow so that we can sustain that. So I'm very comfortable that our ability to weather a crisis, our reserves are going to be more than sufficient for that, because we've been able to do it with this project. And finally, so we're $200,000at this point. It looks like that's about where we are in terms of being over budget. Petros can speak to this, but we talked and he suggested that. So him and Josh have put a motion on the table for $400,000, just so we don't never have to come back here again, because he don't like coming back here for this. And that's the number that's on the agenda. Petros, do you want to add anything or make any comments on, or Josh?
I think it's also important to keep in mind that the $200,000 that we urgently do need in addition to that is only it's less than half a year worth of revenue from this new capital fee that we would get.
Yeah.
So I think that's something to keep in mind. When you look into the grand scheme of things, this is around 5 months worth of this new fee that we would be in. So I think that's something to keep in mind in terms of perspective. And we're adding in that extra $200,000 just because if you're going to be having a capital project, you want to make sure you have some contingency. And at this point, we've used that contingency fund up. So that's just kind of rational.
Okay, and with that, we'll go to questions. We only have a few minutes, so
I'll make one last point. We're coming here because this is what we feel is the base case scenario. I want to be clear. I don't know that we're going to actually need the money, and I'm not saying we won't. I'm just saying, as this council knows, as PBQ council knows, I'm pretty big on like being as open and frank, and we're really committed to like laying it all out there. So this is where we're at. We wanted to let you know. Rather than trying to scrape by and come back in an emergency. This is a proactive action.
So again, I would encourage succinct questions, and if your comments are more debate, shall I say, I might encourage them to happen in the motion that's going to be taking place a little bit later this meeting, just so we can get to more questions that Mr. Mitchell can answer in this period. Councillor Schiavone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the presentation. I have a ton of questions, but I'll only ask one. If we keep using cheap products, like you mentioned, cheaper concrete, saving $30,000, railing, stuff like that, how much does that really affect the quality and the longevity of the project?
That's a very good question. We are not interested in using cheap stuff. What we're looking at is more inexpensive options. So the railings are a good example. We have these tiers of vegetation on the south side of the atrium.
Yep.
And actually, the guardrail isn't at the top level, because that would kind of ruin the sight lines of the building. But safety rules require that we do have a guardrail, but we have it on the next tier down. And when the vegetation's grown, it's going to be pretty much obscured. Okay. Well, that was spec'd as having a stainless steel footing that was set into the concrete, which makes it very hard to do the expensive to do the concrete, and a tempered glass with a stainless steel rail on top kind of handrail. Who the hell needs that one? It's going to be the middle of the damn garden. So we changed that because that was just silly. Things like that. The other big one that we save $140 on is the roof. The roof's going to be 40 feet away. Stucco, if it's done well, will not be
what's
particularly
stucco?
Problematic. It's a plastery thing.
It's
so.
It's, when the wall's like...
Okay. Versus metal. Now, we did look at other... And to get to your point about quality, we looked at other metal panel options that were cheaper, and to be honest, they were ugly. So we went with a stucco because it would look better.
Okay, the biggest... The one where I went to use in there too was longevity of the project. So how long is that going to last as opposed to the other options?
Here's the value. Here's the beauty of it. Let's rebuild the damn thing. It's mostly. I should be clear about this. We are on the hook for the actual plaza itself. But the shell of the building is actually part of the agreement, and stuff like that is actually going to be there. And they actually drove the cost. One of the things that's costing us an extra $100,000 is they want a different kind of roofing. So, a specific kind of roofing. So that's...
Councillor Champagne.
Some of my questions have kind of been answered, but so the whole sidewalk curb fiasco, I just can't get it in my head.
Okay, so what happened is there are several phases to developing a project: schematic design, development, etc. So those phases are designed so you can figure out exactly what you're going to build. And work with the university closely on that, and our architects did as well. And after it all got approved, the final design part, which is design development, and we started working on what are called contract documents. So you take the final design and you start doing the final drawings. The university comes back and says, you know, we've been thinking about it, and the road isn't going to be wide enough. It needs to be 8 meters wide plus a 2 meter sidewalk and each thing. They'd never said anything about this custom. So it wasn't incorporated in the cost. And they said, well, you need to do this with the lighting. You need to do this with, we want you to do the curves on the south side of the street as well. And we weren't particularly thrilled about that, but we pushed them back. They wanted us originally to, could you price out for us how much it costs to put paving stones down? And paving stones are incredibly expensive because they actually have to be, I learned so much in this project. They have to be able to support like a semi. Because it's a road, right? And they were like, $2,000 a square foot, $1,000 a square foot to do them. So we said, okay, we started with the university saying, okay, we'll go price that up. We go price it up. We came back and say, this is what the price is. That's not reasonable. And we said, well, then you have to pave the whole thing. Initially, our assumption in pricing was that we would have to restore it to the same condition. And I think that our interpretations of the same condition are quite a bit different from the universities. So we thought we would have to kind of patch up the road, and they're like, no, you're going to have to take off the first, take off 3/8 of an inch, or 7/8 of an inch or whatever, and repave the road in front of the area that we were in. It's their land. Like, we don't have a lot of choice. We drove them back as far as we could. Now, to be fair, they have been incredibly helpful in a lot of ways. They got the gas line for us in for free, and it's $300,000 that we're going to get. They're giving it to us not because our actual payment would cost that much, but rather because that's how much they're going to save, and they know we need the money. So they haven't been completely unfair. It's just been this kind of push and pull thing. And they were kind of still off the mark in terms of making those requirements clear less earlier in the process. Would you say that's fair, John?
Yeah. And those delays would also force us to delay part of the project.
The tendering, yes.
And so we would have been, I guess, 3 months ahead of where we are right now.
Yeah, and the other thing, the market here is so damn peaky because, I mean, you talk about, where the boom and the impact it has on construction costs.
Yeah.
I really saw it. Like, the things change over 6 months in Alberta because look what's going on in this city. I don't know, they say it's not related, but I think our consultants are not so sure it's directly related, but I think it all ties in. Look at all the construction that's going on downtown now. There's three or four major projects going on. There's a lot of There's a lot more condos going up again. There's a lot more commercial development along the outskirts, and that's sucking up the contractors.
I'm going to have to stop you there because we are now over time, over 30 minutes.
Motion
to extend
the presentation by 15
minutes. Okay, there's a motion to extend by 15 minutes. Do we have a seconder for that? President Kuzmu. Thank you very much. All those in favor of extending? Those opposed? Okay, that motion carries. Sorry, Vice President, you can continue.
Yeah. In terms of the tender process and how competitive the landscape is, our construction manager put it best is that we have a very finicky project, and if there are other projects across the city where you can just pour in concrete and do very little work and you can make more money than you would with our project, then why wouldn't you? So people are there waiting for the easier projects. I'll make them more money than our project. That'll be a lot more work. They'll be more liable.
Councillor Speakman.
With the guardrail, as you say, since it's going to be in a garden anyway, have you considered, or is it possible to have sort of a denser, taller shrubbery instead of a metal rail?
We have to. It's code. But it's going to be just painted.
Councillor Mills.
Thank you. My question has already been mentioned, but just about cutting costs and, you know, using cheap materials and then it actually looks like a cheap building. That's kind of my concern. But it sounds like.
Okay, well, let me speak on here. Architects, like, they're like, let's make it beautiful. Let's make it perfect. And when we scale it back, we are not going with cheap. Josh, I will tell you this, I at times, and Petros, our consultants, our project manager is really committed to, like, hitting targets. He's really upset, and, like, that's why we're getting a bit of a discount on our price, and that's after we said, no, we feel you need to be paid. He would push really hard, and we would push back and say, no, we would kind of mediate, and we would say, no, this is too much. Dialogue, this is just too much, this is too fancy. But to our project manager, we'd say, look, we need this to be something of a statement. So that's why the glass was something we really kept.
If I could chime in as well, I had the exact same mindset of, like, if we're going to be spending, you know, over $13 million or whatever on this project, it better be damn good, kind of thing. And that's why we could have been making a lot more cuts for the project, but I was like, there's no point in us sacrificing these iconic pieces of the entire renovation project when it's only worth, like, what, 5 months worth of extra revenue when it comes to having this capital fee in place. I was like, you might as well at least try and capture the essence of the project as it originally was designed in order to retain this greater vision. So that's kind of my perspective. It's nice to see that it seems like other counselors are also raising the same thoughts. I think originally, perhaps some of the consultants or some of the folks on the team were very worried, very scared of council, but I was like, I think...
We're very scared.
Folks are, actually. But I was like, I think from the student perspective, we care more about, like, in the long term, you know, what kind of, like, this is going to be a bigger impact than saving $20,000.
When they knew they had to break the news to us about the overrun on the last bid, like, they waited. They actually planned. You could tell they planned it out to tell me and Josh, because and they, like, because I didn't get I was scarily quiet to them, but we expressed our disappointment, and they take that very seriously. They were very upset that they weren't able to hit the targets, and it was completely. They really thought they could do it. They really thought they could do it.
Councillor Bannister.
Hello. So, I just don't understand one of the costs under one of the budgets. It's like negative $300,000 for energy management. I don't know if I just was glazing at that time over. But
sure,
can you explain that to me?
So, we're not actually cutting the full... We're not actually cutting... This is 193. We're not actually cutting 1.1. We're cutting about 600,000 and adding back in money that we didn't know we'd have before, that we since have confirmed that we have. And this money here is this isn't actually a negative money. This is money coming into us that we're going to receive from the university. But we've accounted for it as a reduction in the overall cost to us of the project. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So there still is energy management going on.
Oh, yeah. This is being... Yeah, the big thing that's making a big difference is we're changing the HVAC system on the lower level to be more efficient, much more efficient. And the other big thing about sustainability is we are going with a clear glass because the quality of the light is just great. And we're putting in blinds, controllable blinds, so that we can control solar loading. But the major thing is just HVAC. That's what we're getting.
I'm going to pretend there was a point of parliamentary inquiry on there, too, just because I think I know where you're getting this, Councillor Bannister. So just to clarify, the energy management program and Vice President...
Oh, sorry.
Mr. DuMichel can clarify, but the program is a grant program. It's not...
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I didn't realize that. It's a university program where they grant out money and they repay for it by calculating how much they save. They repay it with that, and it's an accounting transaction.
Councillor Nguyen.
I think at one point in your presentation you mentioned something about loans or money coming in at some point, maybe, and so that you weren't sure where it was coming from, so I was wondering if you could clarify on that.
Okay, so the financing, the amount of money that we're going to have, because that we're going to actually use to apply to this project, is money from our reserves, it's the money that we just talked about, money coming in from other people, and it's the $13 million loan that the university took out from the university to pay for this program. The university, you're asking about why, okay, I understand. So the university has gotten a $13 million loan from the government for this project. It's for us, but they have certain regulatory requirements. They haven't given it to us yet. We actually have to submit our invoices to them and then they'll reimburse us. So that's what I mean by the loan. The university has a loan. We're on the hook to repay the loan for them, but they don't actually give us the money until we give them a bill. And that's what I was kind of talking about earlier. I'm probably still being clear as much. I apologize. Okay.
Councillor Malik?
Thank you, Mark, for the presentation.
You're welcome.
My question is regarding now this plaza won't be done until next March, right?
And no one was more upset about it. Josh will tell you, I was so mad about this.
Yeah. So the construction will be going on throughout the next fall and half of the winter semester.
Yeah.
So is that going to affect the student life and stuff? Because a lot of people study there. And the noise will repel them. And in result, it can affect the businesses there.
Yes.
Because people won't be coming to sub anymore and won't be eating there. So that might affect the
except for a short period of time, that the noise will be any worse than it is currently. Because there's a lot of noise going on inside right now. We have found that business has been very stable. Because we won't knock out the wall that divides the inside from the outside from the inside in the atrium area. We won't knock that out until the outside's pretty much done. So that'll be a relatively quick process. So I'm hoping that it's a risk, but I'm hoping that we'll manage that pretty well. We've managed all of those kinds of issues so far pretty well. The services aren't very happy because they're right where the construction is going on right now. But aside from that, everyone else has been pretty okay with how we've managed the construction changes. I am hopeful it will come faster than March. A lot of it's weather dependent, and I'm actually heartbroken because it won't really sing. The whole design won't really sing. The downstairs won't get completely used the way it should until we get that natural light. And we were in there today taking a look, and the light is going to be fantastic. And if you're interested in tours, let me know, and we'll organize one for you.
Councillor Hammond.
It's been answered.
Okay, Councillor Schiavone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thanks again for the invitation. I should preface this by saying I don't mean to come on as hostile by this, but if market conditions where construction firms are more interested in other bigger projects are such a large impact on the project where we're saying we got fewer bidders than we're imagining, why wasn't that something we were thinking about? Like, why didn't we realize that in advance? Or has something changed since then? And what was expected? How many bids were we expecting versus how many we actually got? Because it seems that is determining a lot of the costs right now.
Well, to answer your first question, That is, I'm not an expert. I don't work in that industry regularly. Yeah. But before we started this, I said to them, like, look, aren't we going to have this problem? Because all these other projects are coming on stream. And they said no. And the university people didn't think would be a big issue. It was genuinely a surprise to people who were in the industry who didn't feel it would be a problem. But I'm with you. I actually said, I mean, I don't know if you remember this, Josh, but I said, are you sure? Because this is, because what about this stuff with the arena net? Well, those are different contractors. That's a different scale of contract. We're using a mid-sized contract on this. So they weren't so concerned about it. Then PAW started. And PAW fell behind initially for a while, and it fell behind on concrete. The university only got one bidder for some of their concrete projects. So it was a bit of a surprise to people. And I think that was a bit of a miss on our consultants' part, to be honest with you.
From my understanding, it also didn't help that the university kind of delayed our
ability
to go to tender by 3 months.
Okay.
And by us going earlier before the year end, so before December, January, our likelihood of getting tender has been higher.
It wasn't entirely the university's fault. All of the architectural firms in the city and, like, for example, ICE is, I think, a year behind right now. We have the same architect as them.
What's ICE?
The into something engineering. So there has been some problems. We've talked to the university about this and said, like, what's your experience with this? They're having a lot of problems with architectural consultants being overworked in the city because of the level of activity. That's pushing their timelines. We had issues with the university, you know, giving us stuff late, like a lot of unexpected things, because this is the first time the students' union has actually gone outside of its building footprint. So we've also been learning a lot. If I was doing this again, I would do it a little bit. I would do a few key things differently. We acted with the best information that we could.
So. About 2 minutes left. If there's one last question, Councillor Schiavone.
Chair. So kind of touching on what Councillor Chantay was mentioning earlier, if the university and the administration is the ones that have caused the scope to change, you know, they're asking for paving stones, they're asking for all this other stuff, why are we putting the bill for it? It seems like, you know, they're making demands on what they need. Why is it that it's our fault, or why are we on the for it?
I don't want to throw the university under the bus, because they've been good partners.
Cool.
And they didn't do anything particularly intentional, and they have been very responsive to the concerns that we raised. But as a large institution, they have legitimate, and I view them as legitimate, concerns about the projects on their campus. And I don't want to get into he said, she said, because when you start to look at this, we still got this project going on. I don't know if the university, the architects, and us having a pissing match.
I understand.
So there were, I don't think it was entirely the university. I think that our architects kind of went some staff changes in the middle of the project. Some people left and had bring in new people. So that created some problems. Like any large project, this is a large project, we've had some teething problems along the way. The university did make some additional requests. We pushed them as much as we could to restrict them. But it's the university land. At the end of the day, they have to say it's okay for us to do this. So we weren't in the best negotiating position at all those points. We had big arguments about the road, for example. Early on, they wanted us to do this, and then you can't do this project. You got to wait 2 years to do it, and we had to actually fight to let us do the project quickly because we wanted to get it done because the price is only going to go up, right? Sorry, Josh, did you want to add to that?
Oh, I was laughing because I think that took up maybe 10 hours of my first one. Talking about roads.
Okay, with that, we've elapsed our additional time. So thank you very much to Mr. Doomshaw.
Thank you.
With that, we've now been going for more than an hour and 30 minutes, and as you remember, our good friends at CAC made that change, so now we can have a recess, even if we haven't dealt with the name of business. So we will resume at 7:55. We will see you in 15 minutes.
Anybody have any questions?
Okay, folks, we'll get the
show on the road again?
You want something?
Just before we get started, just an administrative note. Councillor Hamid is withdrawing item 6C, so we will not be dealing with item 6C. It has been withdrawn. With that, we will carry on with our usual order of business, and that takes us to executive committee reports. Are there any executives wishing to report? President Kuzmun.
Hello, Council. So in case you don't realize, it's just Josh and I who's been down the fort in the office for a while. Cheers, I understand. So as a result, it's been unbelievably busy on my end, as two of us are trying to do the work of the other executives. As a result, it's kind of made it a little bit difficult to complete my executive committee report at time. But with that being said, I will provide an oral report. So in regards to the Vice President external portfolio, what's been happening is Michael Chong, an MP, swung by, and this is part of the SU's advocacy speaker series. During reading week, that was well attended. Well, it was already attended, actually, I should say, but it was a good event. We sent letters to the Minister of State and our MP, and also made a press release in regards to the federal government's proposed changes to the Federal Elections Act, because we're concerned that it might make it more difficult for students to vote. So that's something for you to check out. In addition to that, this week is legislature week. Yesterday, I was able to be on the floor of the Legislative Assembly for the speech from the throne. And this Thursday, I'm planning on attending the budget being announced, and that way we can provide the student perspective to the media when it does get released. For the BPA, I attended one of those committees. For the BPSL, there's the International Student Association stuff taking place. In regards for my portfolio, TVAC, MVAC, we're trying to see if we can reignite a conversation with the University of the Provost on changing our kind of mandatory non-instructional fee framework. It's very preliminary talks right now, but hopefully there's some potential there. We spent a lot of time in regards to talking about the sub-renovation project, how we can cut costs and make sure that we present a good option to Students' Council. We'll be voting about that later today. In addition to that, the Comprehensive Institutional Plan, so that's the university's big budget and master plan for the year, is being reviewed in various governance committees. It looks like international student tuition is going to be probably increasing beyond CPI next year. And that is pretty much it on my end.
Thank you. Vice President Lay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm smiling just when I was looking at my council report, but we got some good news. So following the press release that President Kuzmu released out as a council, talking about the talks with President Gerasimo Sigra and Vice President Kuzmu, there is an agreement on how to proceed forward with the former leadership presidents. So at FDC, the Facilities Development Committee, which is a subcommittee of GFC, there is a talk about approving the schematic design for the formerly known leadership residents. But on the floor, there's a discussion first, but then I put a motion to amend the name, and the name that arose is the Saskatchewan Drive Residents. And so I think this is to align with what President Samra Sekera said before about how there's going to be distinctions between the residents and the whole Peter Lougheed Leadership Initiative of College, and so it's just going to be a resident, so to symbolize that as well, more than just symbolic, it'll change. It's going to be called Saskatchewan Drive Residency until there's a donor that buys the name. The other big piece, you're all aware, I'm sure, is the executive election, and with that coming on, that says it's the end of our term. Happily and unfortunately. So I was told with Mark that he won't have a good night's rest until July. I said, I'll have a good night's rest after April. But with that, Vice President Sheldon and I, we're going to be focusing on the transition of the executive. It's something I'm really excited and passionate about, not just because I'm leaving, but I think it's to prepare our successors to do the job well and to fill the gaps where we were able this year.
Thank you, Vice President. Totally thought we were going to call that place Kuzmu House. Let's move on. Board and committee reports. Any board and committee reports?
Councillor Speakman?
Yeah. I know it's most people are busy or involved with one finger or another in elections, but the IRC has got our permission and money to have our survey printed, so we'll be coming to you all to help us administer those, I guess is the right word, to help get that feedback from our election stakeholders. So please look favorably on my future emails asking you for volunteer help for that.
Thank you. Councillor Hamid?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Senate applications for the next year are up. They can be found at jobkin.ca. Please look at them. And the deadline is 10th March. If you guys want to run, I would invite you guys to apply, not run. And spread this to your friends. The more applications we have, the better we have a chance for a good selection of candidates.
Request for
he wants to take it.
Yeah.
Is it the nominating committee that selects the second?
We recommend it to council and council.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other committee chairs? Vice President Lay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I'm speaking on behalf of the Budget and Finance Committee. We'll be talking about the budget principles today soon, so I hope you read it. If not, quickly skim through it in the next few minutes before the motion comes up on the table. So. That'll be good. So I'll explain it once we get there, but essentially it outlines the principles that we'll have for forming next year's budget and what is prioritized when we do look at if we're in a surplus or excess.
Thank you. Any other board pictures? Okay, we will carry on to question period. Councillor Champagne.
Just quickly, wasn't item 6C special order to the main agenda?
Yes. Item 6.
6C.
No, 6. Okay, all of the items on the late editions were moved to the main agenda except item 6C was withdrawn.
Yeah, but once it's on the main agenda, can't it be not,
like, can it be not withdrawn, is what you're asking? It can be withdrawn unilaterally by the mover until it's been read in. So essentially until we get to that point in the agenda. So once I've read the motion, like, and we're at that point in the agenda, and we begin debate and so on, then withdrawal requires unanimous consent of the House. But before we get to the motion itself, the mover can unilaterally withdraw the motion. And I understand in this case it was a question of relevancy that committee has already met or something like that. But in any case, it can be done unilaterally. Question period. Councillor Schifoni.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the chair of the nominating committee. I'm just curious what has taken so long to get these out to us. The fact that it's on the late edition is a little bit upsetting to me, considering this was on the order paper almost a month ago now. So could you explain what caused the delay? And well, I understand now that the bears and pens on, so that's addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So the main reason for the delay was essentially the meeting time for all the members of the nominating committee. We wanted to meet right after the nominations had been declined, but unfortunately none of our schedules aligned, and then we had week meet, which caused another setback for us, and then we met after, as soon as the reading meet was done. We decided on all these applications and voted on the people that we wanted, and we recommended it to the council. And Monday was the second meeting that we had, and we just wanted to make sure that everybody was okay with the application, all the applications. And since we had the meeting on Monday around 4 or 5 p.m., that is why it's on the resolution and not in the article.
Thank you. Thank you. Councillor Bannister?
I have a question for President Kuznew. How do executives decide when they're taking vacations? And I ask that because I find it weird that while two people are on a leave of absence, a third would take a vacation. And I just don't understand the process.
President?
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's up to an exec to figure out when they take a vacation. Normally, it's months in advance when they kind of decide it. It's based off of when one can visit someone's family if they're going on a family trip. So that's kind of normally what happens. And months ahead of time, they'll find out if there's a family trip. And normally, we're separated from our families most of the time. I see Josh more than I see my own mom. And actually, I live at home. So, yeah, true story. But that's what happens, and we try and plan it during periods where we find that we're at our most burnt out and we're probably not going to be that effective. So, yeah, and to be fair, like, I guess this is, it's an odd week in that it's a really quiet week, but kind of busy week as well. During elections, if you just find that's what happens.
Councilor Schiavone?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To your president, the update on Liberty College.
Yes, thanks for the excellent question, Councillor Schiavone. So, last council meeting, we had got facilitated conversation on, you know, what are everyone's different thoughts on what they'd like to see change with the leadership college, and not just the residents, the entire college as a whole. So what we took is what we took, what we heard from you folks is what we took to the university administration, and we got exactly what council asked for. And it's all kind of laid out in the press release, of which I believe I've shared with council already. If not, no, okay. I did already. Yeah, I sent it as an email. Yes, of course I did. But anyways, we sent it out, and we got essentially a lot of demands. And in addition to that, a nice little bonus is that Josh got the name change, and I know that was kind of a contentious issue. So I think this, you folks should be really proud of the work that you did and really steering this advocacy initiative, and I think you folks deserve to have yourselves. It's also worth noting that the provincial government announced that it will be providing funding for the leadership initiative. And the reason why I say initiative and not college is initiative is the U of A Plus Master. We're not entirely sure how much money it's going to be. Announced, we're hearing rumors of $7 million for every year for 10 years, and we're not too sure how much of that would go to U of A and how much what that would go to the college and not the residents. But with that being said, I'm feeling very, very confident with how we're progressing forward in this entire college. So, thanks for asking the great question.
Councillor Champagne?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is directed towards the chair of the nominating committee. Simply, why was
Item 6C
withdrawn?
Sir
Hamid? Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Upon discussion with Chair for GAC, she informed me that the committee had already met, and basically we're not accepting new members for next year. So once that starts up, we can look at the nominations from then, but if we went ahead with the nomination for Item 6C, then they won't have a committee to sit on for the remainder of this year. So there was no relevancy for nominating those two individuals.
Point of information. Why, I guess, the miscommunication between NOMCOM and GAC? Could you maybe explain that? It just seems, you know, the discrepancies in there? Is that from the new committee or?
I contacted Angela early before, so the term for the members of GAC, the students, or sorry, the Grass Valley, for the Golden Baron had a way to be on the committee. So those two members that were supposed to sit on the committee, their terms were supposed to go from February the 3rd or something to March 1st. So I think because they were supposed to sit on that committee in order to recommend funding to the grant allocation committee. So when I talked to him at the beginning, he wasn't able to, I guess, get the committee to figure out who was sitting on the committee. And so at this point, that committee has to send a recommendation to GAC by March 4th, so they've already done that. So there's no point for them to.
Thank you. Vice President Lay.
My question is for the president. And so I heard that classes, some undergraduate classes were different. And so what are you going to do about that?
Thanks for the excellent question. So in case you folks don't know, it's university, it's part of
university regulation that kept classes are canceled from 12 to 1 every year, this time of the year, just for the Meyer Horowitz form. It's a really interesting piece and rule that they have within the university. But that being said, some professors still choose not to actually cancel their classes. So with that being said, I'm trying to get as much information as possible about which classes weren't canceled, and I'm planning to forward that over to the registrar's office and saying, hey, you know, this is an issue I've been hearing about on campus for at least the past 7 years I've been here. And these are issues that I think we'd like you folks to look into. So I made a Facebook status about it. People are sharing it. I'll tweet about it for giving me their feedback. It would be great if you folks can share that status. If you've heard anything, please send it over to me, and I'll try and forward it to the registrar's office. And please be sure to vote.
So I have a guest asking to speak. Friendly reminder to guests, unfortunately I can't give you direct speaking privileges. You are free, though, to tap a friendly neighborhood other member of council on the shoulder who might defer their speaking turn to you. So feel free to introduce yourself. And
My name is Justin Bridge.
Councillor Douglas looks like he's doing that. So. Perfect. Sorry about that. It's just a kind of a procedural thing, so go ahead.
I'm here from Augustana, sitting on behalf of our Augustana Republican. She's running for a position. So this is a question to the president. I heard...
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Councilor Bannister?
He's allowed to speak on behalf of candidates who are taking a leave about it.
He's not a proxy.
I'm not a proxy.
Oh,
hence why he wasn't able to have direct speaking privileges.
Yeah. My apologies.
I heard second-hand information that even though classes were canceled, you know, in regards to people attending the forum, attendance was quite low. Is there anything that we can do maybe to fix that or anything a little worried about that?
In my opinion, attendance was actually probably the highest I've ever seen in 7 years I've been on campus. I think one of the issues is maybe my expectations are pretty low. I think that could be it. You know, like, it would be great if we can pack the Meyer Horowitz Theater. That being said, it's also kind of hard to measure attendance when we also have a live stream going on. But in terms of how we can increase or promote more people to be involved in the elections, I think it's up to at the very least, each counselor encouraging students to vote and getting information out there. Now, I know that it seems like each counselor has their hands involved with some election or another, so I'm sure that's already taking place. But the more that we can promote elections taking place, doing classroom talks, being involved in the campaign as well. Even if it's a joke campaign, I think that's all really important aspects of getting increased voter turnout. So, thanks for the great question. It's a long issue, and I think it's something that IRC is interested in tackling with their recent survey. Excellent question.
Thank you. Councillor Malik.
My question is similar to Draper. It's regarding there was no Facebook event for Mayor Horowitz, and it was not even publicized. I think, what was that?
I'm assuming that president, or question to the president? Or do you want to
answer? Were you asking it to me, or?
Sure,
and the president can defer.
Yeah, sure. So the CRO is not the student's union employee. He's the employee of CAC and the Speaker of Council. Right, so I can't boss the CRO around because he's not an employee of me. So that's kind of a challenge of I need to make sure that I don't kind of overstep my boundary because this is council's, you know, one of council's direct employees. So it's kind of up to CAC, chair, speakerish. I'm not entirely sure, so I might defer to you two, actually, in terms of what would be the best thing. But yeah, that's I'm not the CRO's boss. It's kind of one of the challenges.
Unless Councillor Borden wants to speak to anything, I can do what I have to say. Okay, I can't speak to the particular question, but just to comment on President Kuzmu's comments about responsibility for the CRO. As President Kuzmu mentioned, the CRO is not an employee of the SU in the sense that he fits within the operational structure for obvious reasons, so that the office is autonomous. The CRO is an officer of council, and thus is accountable to council as a whole. And to clarify, the speaker actually doesn't have any reporting line at all with the CRO. CAC has, I forget the exact phrasing, but CAC is responsible for overseeing the CRO, or something to that effect, but the CRO is appointed by and responsible to council. So if there were concerns, they could be perhaps best brought forward. They could be brought forward to council. They could also be brought forward to CAC. Councillor Borden, did you want to add?
Just a reminder, everyone's on CAC, so if you had concerns prior to this, that you could have come. I've had some councillors come, and we have discussed it. Got like
reports on his like by-election
and stuff like that, so everyone's on
that. Thank you. Councillor Bannister.
I have a question for President Kuzma. Do you think if you, and I'm not in not your opinion, if you had to channel the opinion of the students of the U of A, do you think that most students want their class to be canceled so they can attend the Meyer Horowitz Forum? Or do you think that they think it's silly?
I think most students appreciate that there's a formal opportunity that exists for them to get involved with the elections. I think what it does is it ensures that there's actually no barrier for a student to, or it tries to minimize the barriers for students to get involved in elections. Because, you know, everyone is really busy with classes, with homework, etc. But if a student can say, you know what, I actually have this 1 hour of the day in which I can get engaged with the elections, I think that means a lot. One of the biggest barriers to participation for voter turnout, in my personal and anecdotal experience, is people don't want to vote because they don't feel like they actually know what's happening. Right? You have a lot of people who, especially with the youth, they get, there's this guilt complex of like, you know what, I don't want to be responsible for voting because I don't know enough. I feel like I should know more and more and more. Whereas, you know, no offense to our seniors or whoever else, in the rest of the population, people are just voting, right? Like, they're taking advantage of their right to vote. And I think it's really important that if we can at least give a formal opportunity for students to be a part of the electoral process, to hear about what the candidates are pitching, I think that goes a long way to at least increasing voter turnout. It's something very unique on this campus. It doesn't exist in other campuses. It's an envy, I think, of our campus that a lot of individuals have. And I think at the end of the day, students do find it worthwhile. And to be perfectly honest with you, I've never heard of this. You know, in just posting this, people are saying, you know, in a joking way, obviously, why don't we cancel the classes when we have to vote, right? So I don't think people are looking for less opportunities to get involved electorally. I think people are looking for expanded opportunities. It kind of ties into the really nice question I thought earlier. So.
Thank you. Councillor Bannister?
I have another question for President Kuzma. This is my last question, I promise. And do you think that the Meyer Horowitz Forum was well advertised enough? And what do you think you could do better?
As one of the many members of the Students' Council, I think that's a question as a council we need to decide because the CRO is the officer of council. Mm-hmm. So my personal opinion, I think we could have done a significantly better job advertising the Meyer Horowitz event. I'm not gonna lie, I totally think that's the case. But we as a council, perhaps through CAC, because we're all members of CAC, should decide what are some ways that we can improve next year's elections process, right? So, again, I'm only one of the many members of Students' Council, and I think that's something that we all need to decide on. And as a result, engage with CAC to figure out what are the next steps.
Thank you. With that, we have 1 more minute left. If you want to sneak a really quick question in.
I have a question for Councillor Morris. Just picking up on those last comments, what do you think could be done in the future to empower all of Council more with elections process?
So, thanks for the question. We had some discussion with ERC where we're wanting to figure out ways where we can make ERC more accessible and have more of a presence because it's kind of been a lackluster committee in history. So we're looking at ways that, like, maybe we could possibly take over control of CRO or control over some bylaws. And we're just having some of those discussions. So if you have any opinions on it, talk to us, come to an ERC meeting, whatever.
Thank you. Now we are out of time. I don't have any more speakers on my speakers list, but if anyone does want to speak, we are out of time unless I see 5 placards to extend question period, which I do not, so we will proceed. And I believe we are at item 6A, Lei Zhang moves that student... Upon the recommendation of the Budget and Finance Committee, that Students' Council approve the 2014-2015 budget principles. I'll give Vice President Lay a chance to introduce. Before I do, I'll give a very brief introduction, and feel free to ding both of us on a point of parliamentary inquiry if you're confused at all with this process, because we only go through it once a year. You'll recall that when we're dealing with changes to political policy or bylaw or whatnot, we sort of do a two-step process. We have a first reading where we deal with principles on the very broad form. We don't deal with the little technical elements, but we deal in a principled sense with what we want to change or what we want to have happen. And then we have a committee of people that are well-versed and knowledged and immersed in this draft, all those principles into sort of technical changes. Then they come back to us for formal approval of technical wording and so on. That's essentially what we're doing with the budget as well. Now, as Vice President Lay can talk about, there's been a number of steps before this step in the process involving BFC and the exec and so on. But we are essentially now at the budget principle process. You're seeing budgets coming in a principled sense in terms of, on principle, what we'd like to do next year. If and when principles are approved, they will go to, I believe it's BFC, for technical drafting with assistance of VP OpsFi and so on, and we will see a second reading budget come back to us, which is sort of the technical budget that we'll be approving at a later date. I will leave it there. Vice President Lay can introduce more as he'd like, and then if you have any questions, feel free to rise on a point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That was a very thorough introduction. But just to add on to that, so the budget principles, as I was saying, it allows management the guidelines and principles to make the budget and, I guess, prioritize certain pieces over others depending on what it said in budget principles. And so, as I jokingly said in previous council meetings, like if Councillor Muhammad, who's a member of the budget finance committee, if he wants to remove RAT, if that's in the budget principles, then that's something that management would be forced to adhere to. Thankfully, he didn't at the meeting, so I appreciate that, Councilor Mahoney. But with this, we'll have the budget principles that over the next two council meetings, because our term on council is actually ending pretty quickly, and we need to have the budget passed before we finish our term. So this is setting the budget for the next year's council and executive to work with. We have to approve that budget. So after we look through it, and hopefully if council approves it, then starting tomorrow, Mark Dubichel, myself, and our senior manager of finance and administration will go and meet with all the senior managers and go through their different departments and work through the budget.
Any points for parliamentary inquiry before we get started? Okay, seeing none, we will open the floor to debate. Mr. President Lay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I'll just walk through it really quickly, and then afterwards I'll wait until everyone has their questions, and then I'll attempt to answer those. So the budget principles, it's divided up into 9 different parts. So you can see the major titles. There's the general part, the staff, the fees, the advocacy representation, services, businesses, entertainment programming, administration, operation, support, and the changes from the 13-14 budget principles. So part of it, largely, I have not changed the main core of the budget principles, and so what I have changed, it's all noted in Section 9, so changes from the 13-14 budget principles. So part of it, sort of timing of the year, what projects have been completed, and then we're moving from the budget principles, and what are some of the projects we foresee us working on in the upcoming year. And I think I'll leave it at that, but if you had a chance to read through it, it's fairly straightforward, but if there's any interest in adding more budget principles, we're also open to that. We met the process, how it worked. It was my role as Vice President of Operations and Finance to recommend to the Budget and Finance Committee the initial set of budget principles, and then at BFC, our role is to look at those recommendations and see if we want to recommend that to Council to approve for the budget principles. So I think the two parts, like, of all the changes that we did add, that I think it's worth discussing are, I'll just walk through them. So in section 9, there's the CPI that the only change, that's our estimation from, that was going to be from the Senior Manager of Finance Administration. The second point, the Advocacy Outreach Communications Officer, that's something that I think it was Councillor Speakman who brought up to the council, or it was Councillor Vital, and why so many executives work on advocacy campaigns, and part of it's because we're understaffed. So this is our attempt as an exec to put advocacy as an important piece in our operations, and having a full-time staff to offload that stress and workload from the executives. The third point, SPAC is removed from the services department, so the financial aid office, essentially, it's moving to the university, and that's bringing up costs and expenses for us. The gender and sexual diversity, identity diversity center, that's something that's an interesting point, and that's something that we're exploring, and that was a project that we had two researchers produce, and I guess it's up to the council whether that's an initiative that we want to pursue in giving funding for. And so part of it, it's not up to me or the executive, but it's something that we've explored, but that's up to council whether that's something we want to keep on the budget principles. The gender-based violence prevention program, the grant that we received from the government, it's elapsed its two-year period, and so that will be dissolved, and some of the services that have been started from that program is moving to, or being moved to different SU services. The student ombud service, that's another interesting point that has always been an awkward point for the student union, because it's a project that, or it's a service that it's jointly funded by the dean of students, and the reporting relationship from the student ombud service that's hired by the SU, they don't really have a clear reporting relationship to our staff, so we can't really regulate their stuff. So that's something we want to explore more in the upcoming year, and how that funding will happen. Crime, Drug, and Juicy, it was removed. The Daily Grind is there now. We removed the addition of the food and beverage outlet as part of the sub-renovation project. It was just a redundant point, and we added the lease of POP coming in, so that'll may affect our budget a bit. And we added the lease spaces available in POP and stuff, so those two were added, so the changes, it's not just deletions, but as well as additions. The sponsorship piece, it moved sections partly because it's going under a different department. It used to be overseen by the marketing department, now it's being seen by the programming and venues department. The investigation expansion of administrative offices. One thing we're exploring with SPAC moving to the admin building and the university is that it might be a possibility that the SU exec offices can expand to the first floor to be more visible and to highlight the relevancy to students, and so we can have an easier access to our members and provide additional resources to the management team. And that was in regards to offloading the burden on the general manager and the senior manager to provide more support. And I think one more that wasn't added there is more funding for student group services in the form of a staff member.
Just got it in. Didn't have that ring. I'll remind the vice president and, in fact, all of council not to be dictating how... I don't want to be dictating how debate goes, but that an option that is available that quite often comes up in the budget debate is a motion to move into an informal consideration. What that allows folks to do is essentially have more than two speaking turns. Specifically, that typically tends to benefit the Vice President of Operations and Finance, who tends to receive a large number of questions during budget debates. So just reminding you that that's an option out there if anyone ever felt we were at a position where we needed to do that. With that, any further debate? Councillor Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Another thing that needs to be noted is the Students' Union shall investigate and allocate additional staff funding for student resources. This was something that we just decided should be added on in terms of the issues that student resources had. I actually recommended this mainly because I worked with SDS for the past year as one of the coordinators. And what we researched was a lot of schools like UCLA, Stanford, they have at least 20 or some people or staff working for student services. So that was something that really, really like stood out for us, mainly because we were two coordinators and three admin assistants which were working part-time. That was something that we wanted to include to make sure that if we have some additional support, with Sveik being moving over to the University of Delaware administrative side, we have some funding that might be loose or some allocations that we can make so that we can have student services get some more support with the issues that they have this year.
Thank you. Further debate? Going twice. President Kuzman.
Yeah. I just wanted to say I'm really glad with the work that BFC did in terms of their budget principles. I'm super happy that I think they did a great job.
Just over the records. Any further debate? No further debate. We will call to question. All those in favor of item 6A, the 2014-2015 budget principles. Those opposed? Okay, that motion carries. And will be referred back to whoever the heck it's supposed to be referred back to. Vice President Lay knows where it needs to go. So thank you very much. With that, we will move on to item 6B on the late editions. Hamid Douglas moved that upon the recommendation of the nominating committee. Students' Council nominate Dylan Hanwell, Samer Sleeman, Helen Cashman, and Cole Goshaluk to sit on the General Faculties Council. Councillor Hamid to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So the nominating committee had about a week to look over the applicants. These were the only four applicants that we had for GSC. And upon the recommendation of the nominating committee, I would strongly advise council to accept this nomination. One thing to add, though, is I should have added their resumes and cover letters to the org members. That is, that's my bad. I didn't really foresee that as an option, but yeah, for future references, I will try and keep that in my mind.
And in fact, I might encourage, I'll remind council, bylaw 500 somewhat restricts what we can release publicly about personal information of volunteers. So if there were ever questions of a personal nature of any of these candidates and or if resumes were provided or whatnot, that's probably best done in camera. So you can certainly debate as you'd like here, but if there's any debate that divulge personal information of volunteers or applicants, that would be something that you would want to move in camera for first. Opening the floor to debate. Councillor Speakman.
I'd like to speak in favor of this motion. As Councillor Hammond said, all your non-com members looked over the resumes and cover letters and all the people are great and want to be taking part in GFC, so let's put them in there.
Thank you. Thank you. Further debate? Seeing no further debate, we'll call the question. All those in favor of item 6B? Those opposed? Okay, that motion is carried. And for all of these, in fact, Councilor Schiavone? Yes, Councilor Schiavone is abstaining. And for this motion and for any other motions in this pact that pass, I will instruct the chair of nominating committee to facilitate any sort of necessary arrangements, and I can certainly be of support if need be for those.
Can you repeat that?
No, just that. That it's probably most appropriate for the chair of nominating committee to be the person getting in touch with these folks and facilitating their appointment and so on, and communicating the appointment to the relevant folks, and that myself and I'm sure any other committee chairs or execs that need to be involved with that are happy to be involved on that, if need be. So that motion carries. Moving on to item 6D, Hamid Douglas moved that upon the recommendation of the nominating committee, Students' Council nominate the next year's president and vice president academic to sit on. I believe that's to sit on the President's Selection Committee for the term 2014 to 2015. And before I allow Councillor Hamid to introduce, I'll just make a point here to clarify this, that Bylaw 100 says that unless otherwise specified, a general order expires concurrently with the term of this year's Council. So part of the reason why this motion is explicitly defining the term of next year. So that this motion doesn't expire concurrently with this council. So with that, Councillor Hamid to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this committee essentially sits on the panel that will decide who the next president for the U of A would be, since President Summers Slater, am I pronouncing that right, her term is expiring soon. So that's why for the next year there we'll be looking for suitable candidates. Generally, in the past, the president and the VP academic have been on this committee, but since they didn't have a nominating committee, so they just went on the committee. But now, since we have a nominating committee, we're going to do a more official process, because we were debating if we wanted to open this up to students at large and keep it within the executive committee. We decided as the committee as a whole that one position should be going to the VP, either between the VP academic or the president, which can be decided by the executive committee, and then the other position can be opened up to the student at large. After this discussion, we opened up a job application at jobkin.ca. We did not receive much applicants via that jobkin ad. Much to our disappointment, but after that, yes, about a week and a half. And yeah, so after that, Vice President Chellen decided to apply for the oncoming VPA on his or her behalf, depending upon who wins, as the VPA of their portfolio, and then it was voted and nominated. That should be an acceptable application, and here we are today.
Thank you. Any debate? Vice President Lay?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I can make a friendly amendment to add apostrophes to next year's apostrophe S and the President's Election Committee apostrophe X on it.
Okay. So there's a motion to add an apostrophe to the word years. So that it would be next year's president, and later on the next line where it says President's Selection Committee, you add apostrophe, so it is President's Selection Committee. Is there any objection to carrying that as friendly? Seeing none, so carried. Councillor Schiavone.
Yeah, I was just curious if perhaps this is directed to the chair of nominating committee or someone else. Who all sits on the committee that picks the next president, other than the president and the VPA? Also, if the nominating committee had considered like counselors instead of executives, I don't know, just the thought.
Thank you. Councillor Bannister.
I have a question for the chair of the nominating committee. Did you let the people running to be the VPA and VP and the president know that this was a change, considering it affects the position they're applying for, or is it appropriate to?
We did.
Oh, and just a friendly reminder that we're in debate, so questions are directed right at people, but we're throwing questions on the floor, and then the chair or anyone else can certainly pick them up. President Kuzma, you're on my speakers list. Did you? No? Okay. Further debate. Councillor Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Vice President Shell actually did CC the potential candidates for UPA in the application, so they're aware of what is happening.
Okay. Cool.
Thank you. Unless you had anything else to add, no? Okay. Further debate. President Kuzma.
Yeah, okay. Sorry. In regards to the question that you asked the nominating committee chair as president, so you see that has knowledge of those questions you asked. So in regards to what's the composition of the presidential search committee, from my understanding, it's going to be having a representative of the non-academic staff association, the academic staff association, graduate students, students union, and we'll have some other board members, from my understanding. Members, I can't necessarily speak for that because I'm not on the nominating committee. With that being said, it's being on the presidential search committee is an unbelievably huge task, and it's something that has a lot of responsibility and weight to it. And I remember I saw some of the interesting back and forth of why are we paying someone for that? You know, I remember someone seeing it on Facebook, and I'm not saying it's a good question. Not necessarily seems a good idea. With that being said, it's something that you normally expect the executive committee on this committee. This is one of the things that council would entrust the executive community to kind of handle it, especially with their expertise and our day-to-day interaction with the university administration. Having the vice president academic representatives be on the presidential search committee is the best thing for this kind of content.
Thank you. Further debate? Councillor Simone?
Might be more of a parliamentary inquiry, not totally sure. But so you mentioned that this motion is special because it extends past our operating
yep.
term. So my question, I'm not sure if it's going to be to you or to Chair of the Nominating Committee, is why is it on us right now to do this as opposed to on next year's council?
That I can't answer, so I'll have to leave that for debate. Sorry. Further debate. Councillor Speakman.
Yeah, as to some earlier comments with councillors as opposed to student at large, we discussed the nominating committee. It doesn't really matter who the person is as long as they can A, commit to all the meetings throughout the year, and B, have at least some familiarity with the presidential portfolio of the U of A. So as a student, they should be in touch with what students know or what students need, as well as what the president will have to do. I may have lost my train of thought there. So I believe, like, I hope it's got enough posted around. I tried to share it. I think I'm going to put it on our, like, Facebook page and stuff, so counselors could potentially apply. And then as for why we make the decision for next year's, is because, I guess, this is a special committee that's only struck once every 4 years or however the president's term ends, and the deadline to apply for this committee is March 10th. So that's why we have to move it, especially onto today's order paper, too. And yeah, because we've struck nominating committee this year that's like within our purview, and the time limit is why it's on us to choose for next year's, which is like kind of weird, but I think it works out. I speak in favor of the motion in general. As Petros was saying, traditionally, or historically, I guess it's been done by the president and the VPA, and we agreed that they probably do have the most expertise and familiarity with it, and I'm really glad to hear that the incoming potential incoming execs are also cool with that.
Thank you. Councillor Mills. Yes. President Kuzma. Okay. Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, we will call to question. All those in favor of item 6D, please raise your placard. All those opposed, thank you. That motion carries. And with that, we will move on to item 6E. Hamid Douglas moved that upon the recommendation of the nominating committee. Our Students' Council nominate Ruojin Bu and Rebecca Adams to sit on the GFC standing committees. Councillor Hamid to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So the GFC standing committees have term for next year, so the next academic year,
We were requested, I'm not really sure about the name, but somebody on behalf of GFC to fill in positions for certain committees for and the GFC standing committees, and we sent out the applications. I believe they were up on the recommendation of Discover Governance and Vice President Chellen about 2.5 weeks. They were up on JobKin. We received 2 applications in those 2.5 weeks, and after reviewing those applications, the nominating committee decided that these 2 candidates should be good. If they are actually selected and voted on by the nominating committee, they have given their preferences for the committees that they want to be seated on, and we will ask them which committees they want to be seated on, and we can go on from there.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further debate? Actually, just while we're here, just to let you guys know, by my quick count, we are at 15. Quorum is 14. So, just so you know. Any further debate? Vice President Lay?
Yeah, my question, I guess, will be to the board, but to the chair of the nominating committee. Which standing committee?
Go ahead and debate. Yeah.
The floor wonder, like, which are open or which do these candidates want to be on?
Okay. Further debate. Vice President Lady, you want to use your second speaking here?
I'll that one up. Yeah, well, is it to go to any standing committee or is it to go to a specific standing committee and which ones? If noted.
Thank you. Further debate. Councillor Helmut.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to save on time, they were asked to give their top 3 choices. And after asking the Vice President Chellen, he said that they can sit on more than one committee. So just so that I can, like, for us to save time, I just decided to allow them to sit on the standing committees, and then I can give them the option of which ones they want after looking at their form. The form stated, please list your top 3 choices. And just so that to save on time, because if I come back to council and be like, hey, if they want to be seated on this, this, and this, that might be a bit of a time issue, mainly because of the time sensitive motion. So just to save on time, I decided, we wanted to make sure that they can be on the committees and then you can let them decide which ones they want to be on.
Thank you. Councillor Schiavone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I recognize that this is time sensitive, but it's very unclear what we're actually voting on now that Vice President Lai brings that up. We don't know where they're going. There's a ton of standing committees there's a few standing committees on GSC for sure, and we don't really know what ones they want to be on. We're not really sure what we're voting on. We're just saying if we want what we want the committees. So I don't know how I feel about that personally. If someone could address that would be nice.
Thank you, Councillor Speakman.
So the ones up for option for the applicants to these standing committees were, are you ready? The Academic Planning Committee, Academic Standards Committee, Committee on the Learning Environment, Campus Law Review Committee, Executive Committee, Nominating Committee of GFC, Facilities Development Committee, Undergraduate Awards and Scholarship Committee, University Teaching Awards Committee. I get that it's kind of unclear. NOMCOM has so far been going on urgency-based meetings, I'd say, and what the upcoming deadlines for these submissions are. And our structure is not the most clear, but at the same time, we did review these applications, and I don't know what constraints there are on kind of privacy or freedom of information or whatever for this type of, it's almost a hiring, but not. So maybe after tonight, we could clear that up and
and send the applicants around. But anyway, no, I know that maybe council can't see it, but NomCom did have a chance to look at specific committees and the specific candidates to make sure that was all good. So I guess, again, I'm generally in favor of this motion.
Thank you. And I'll pretend there was a point of parliamentary inquiry on the end there just to clarify some of the questions surrounding that. So council is obviously privy to any information that they deem relevant for a motion they're required to make. So council could request copies of the resumes or whatnot, or NomCom could choose to provide them on their own decision. In either case, those would, of course, need to come in camera. So we would have to move in camera and then present documents or send them in some other secure fashion. The same would go for if members of NomCom or anyone else involved in this process were to discuss merits discussed or something like that as some of the decision-making process surrounding selection of candidates. Again, that would be something that would have to be done in camera if they tried to do so. Councillor Hamid. Or did you? No. Mr. DeMichel.
I don't usually speak to regular motions of council, but I'm actually really confused about this motion. A couple of things. First, I want to say that we used to have an NomCom back in the day, and it was hell. So I appreciate the work that NomCom has put in. So, like Councillor Schiavone said, what I'm about to say, it's not meant in a negative way. I'm just giving some positive, constructive feedback. First, I can't tell what year this is for. Is this for next year or for the rest of this current academic year? Secondly, what is the time frame and urgency on this? I mean, if it's for next academic year, when does that start? And that, because I'm thinking it's for next year because of my assumption is it's for next year because of Councillor Speakman's comments about it being for APC, CLE, ASC, CRC. These are pretty important committees. And if it's for next year, I'm curious as to what the urgency is. I throw that on the floor.
Thank you. Further debate, Councillor Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So these are for next year, these were only given to us about 2 weeks ago when Vice President Chellon made this known to me, and the GFC people want us to get those nominations by March 4th. That is what my understanding is. March 10th. We have to give these by March 10th because they have to select their seats in these committees by, I believe, March 10th, and then they have to move forward with approving them in GFC. So that is why this is time sensitive. Also, I would, if the council is willing to spend the time, we can move in camera and then you can look at the two resumes. There are only two applications, so I can email these applications to the speaker, and you can put it on the projector or something like that, and the council can look over it. I realize this is chaotic, and I really apologize because I don't have much experience with these. With nominations, because this is the first time I'm dealing with this sort of stuff. But in the future, I really hope that I will be better suited to work on these nominations. But for the time being, this is what I suggest. And it's up to council if they want to move into any kind of way.
Thank you. Further debate? Seeing no further debate. Unless there's something going on there. Councillor Bannister, debate.
I would like to defer my speech to the council.
Councillor Speakman?
Okay, so this is not a straw poll, but if people actually want to see the moving camera and see the applications, can you all give me a jazz fingers or towards Avila?
I would just encourage putting a motion to move in camera if you're curious about that, and then if it fails, there's your straw poll. That's the reason, actually, why there really aren't straw polls, because you can just do the motion itself. So.
So I'll steal Maria's last speaking, or one of her speaking turns anyway.
Okay.
This just seems like a general sense of mild confusion in the room as to this motion, and I think I'd like to call back to, when we created NomCom to sort of ease some of that.
in the spirit of any student is better than zero student, and since the GFC sort of arbitrary deadline is March 10th, and if we don't put someone forth by then we may not have another chance to for the whole academic year, and since these are real students who have submitted real, at least basic resumes, and have some put some thought into this, I think we should go ahead and put them on the GFC standing committees.
Thank you. Councillor Mills.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would have to agree with William Duchel. The sentiments about the concerns regarding the timeline for the nominations, is it this year, the next year, come on. So if a member of nominated committee could make an amendment to reflect the years that these students will be nominated for on this current motion, that would be helpful. I'm not too sure if it's this year or next year. That would be great. And if there was anything else, that was the main thing, right, with the years. Thanks.
Thank you. Further debate? Oh, so, thank you, Councillor Douglas. Sorry, my apologies.
I'll defer my speaking turn to Justin Draper.
Go ahead.
I'd like to ask, just as somebody who's slightly unfamiliar with the issue, and I guess this kind of goes along with an answer to the previous question, but why were these applicants searched for outside of council? Well, a council member could have easily, we know could be competent at the position, we know they would fulfill the requirements. Why wasn't the council member searching outside?
Thank you. Further debate? Councillor Hamid, you've hit your two speaking turn max. You could either get a deferral or move into informal consideration. President Kuzmu?
Thank you for my speaking turn.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and President Kuzmu. Mainly, the nominating committee was created so that we could have more student large involvement within the SU and the University of Alberta. So, regarding that sentiment, that is why we are reaching out to students at large rather than having counselors. Well, you need to understand that we are actually volunteers and we have like courses and everything else to do. So it's not ideal that we take on all these committees and all these meetings that we need to allocate the year to our studies and all that stuff. So because of that, and just to make sure that more students at large are involved, that's why we opened it up to the normal public, if you will. Yeah, that's basically the sentiment behind it. The counselors are still open to apply. We aren't discriminating if they're a counselor or not. But yeah, generally, if we have an application, we consider them and so forth.
Okay, further debate? Seeing no further debate, we will call to question. All those in favor of item 6E? Please raise your placard. I'm sorry?
Oh,
Councillor Mills, okay, you can just sneak it in. Move to make an amendment?
Yes.
If you tell me what you'd like to do, we could.
I would like to move to amend the motion to reflect the years that this nomination will occur for.
Okay. And if I understand correctly from members of NOMCOM, this is for the 2014-2015 term. Is that correct? If that's the case, I might suggest amending it by saying, essentially adding to the very end of it the words, for the 2014-2015 term, for the 2014-2015 year.
Sure, let's do that and make it friendly amendment.
I can try doing it as a friendly amendment. So again, the amendment is to add for the 2014-2015 year. Do we have a seconder for that amendment? Thank you, Councillor Morris. Is there any objection to carrying that amendment as friendly? Vice President Lay objects. So all those in... Or sorry, we can go into debate, sorry. Councillor Mills to introduce.
I think you just wanted to reflect that these nominations are for a specific academic year. They're not indefinite or for this year. Just confusion regarding that.
Okay, further debate. Vice President Lay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe I missed a piece, so right now, in my mind, I'm voting against this because what happens with the general GFC election that's happening in a couple of weeks, if it's whether 2014, 2015. In my mind, it would make sense. It's only, I thought it was originally for the 2013, 2014 year because like their terms will end at the end of April, and then the people who were voted for that position, whatever faculty for GFC, will start their terms in May.
Thank you. Before I move on to debate, I'm going to pretend there's a point of parliamentary inquiry on there and perhaps save a debate turn as well. Just a friendly reminder to council that bylaw, basically our, the SU elections bylaws only deal with elections to GFC. The Students' Union has no legislation surrounding elections to GFC standing committees. So just to clarify that. Councillor Mills, debate.
Just to address some of your concerns, from my understanding, the standing committees have a separate process for filling the student positions that are, so I currently sit on GFC, the whole body with 100 plus students chaired by the president of the university, but I do not sit on a standing committee. In order to do that, I would have had to have applied this time last year before the nomination package for GFC was even submitted to the CRO. I would have had to apply for a standing committee. So they're completely separate processes for filling those students, which is why we need to make this process and then having that year is relevant. Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes sense.
Okay.
Thank you. Further debate on the amendment? Councillor Speakman?
Just to put it on the record, I think this illustrates how much reform GFC is in need of and how much it messes us up. This, GFC, next year's council should advocate for change for this process, I think.
Thank you. Further debate, President Kuzmund.
Speaking of advocating for change to the GFC's governance structure, that's completely unrelated to this, but well, somewhat related to this. The current vice president academic has been spending a tremendous amount of effort on this issue, and it's something that we've been trying to get on the GFC agenda for a while now, a report on reforming governance at the UVA.
President Kuzma, I'll remind you, we're debating an amendment about the date.
So one of the issues that I'm working on is actually trying to get this on the agenda for the next GFC meeting tomorrow, and I think it's going to be about the first administration. But I just want to highlight the excellent point that Councillor Speakman raised.
Thank you. Further debate on the amendment? Seeing no further debate on the amendment, we will call the amendment to question. So all those in favor of the amendment? Any opposed? Okay, the amendment carries. We are back to debate on the original motion. Any further debate on the original motion as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor of item 6E as amended? Any opposed? Thank you. That motion's carried. With that, we move on to item 7A. Lay Kuzmu move to authorize an additional allocation of up to $400,000 from unrestricted reserves to be applied to the sub-expansion and renovation project. Vice President Lay to introduce.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So this is in relation to the presentation that the General Manager gave earlier about the sub-renovation and the need for more funds. And if I can add a funny story to it about how when Sub was first created, and they were going through the same process that we are doing now of cutting certain features out, and how their potential like headaches down the road. One thing that I learned about earlier when I got into my term is that one of the key elements that was cut out of the original design was a third elevator in Sub. After all these years, seeing the headache and frustration that we get from the R, two elevator system, and for the most part, one elevator that we deal with. Just like, bear that in mind as we go.
Okay, any debate? Debate on item 7A. Going once, going twice, we will call to question. All those in favor of item 7A, all those opposed. Okay, that motion is carried. I have no idea where that came from. With that, we are at the end of our agenda package. I would look favorably upon a motion to adjourn, and after that, I got to give it to Councillor Champagne. Councillor Mills seconds. All those in favor of adjourning? Those opposed? That motion's carried. President Kuzmu. Vice President Chellen. Vice President Woods is not here. Vice President Lay. Vice President Lau is on leave. Governor Kelly is still here. Councillor Patel. Councillor Borden. Councillor Mills. Councillor Hanwell is on leave. Councillor Bannister. Councillor Schiavone. Councillor Muhammad is on leave. Councillor Rilke is on leave. Councillor Minarski. Councillor Valdez. Councillor Corbett. Councillor Horvat. Councillor Malik. Councillor Hamid. Councillor Hansborough is on leave. Councillor Lamb. Councillor Morris.
Present.
Councillor Sim. Councillor Nguyen. Councillor Champagne. Councillor Speakman.
Here.
Councillor Hodgson is on leave. Councillor Huang.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Thank you. Councillor Zhang. Councillor Graham. Proxy for Councillor Bidchik. Councillor Douglas.
Yep.
And Mr. Dumichel is here. Thank you very much, folks. We will see you in a couple weeks' time. We are adjourned at 9:08.